The following podcast is a presentation of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
You'll see me again at 4 o'clock, but I just want to thank you all for coming. I hope you have a useful session. I want to thank Philippa for putting this event together. Philippa, thank you.
And this is a time for you to ask questions and to talk about your concerns as well. I also want to thank our alumni and, of course, all of you that are here. And the wonderful Islands East Best staff that are here. Adriana, Lynn, Brooks, Rosie. See everybody. And I see some old faces that I haven't seen for a while. So it's good to see you. Thank you. And please, without further ado, I'll hand it over to Philippa.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we are very lucky today to have some very experienced alumni here, as well as some current students, some returning students from last semester. And the purpose of the panel today is for you to get as much information out of these people as possible to help you personally. So they're going to be each giving, introducing themselves, what they're doing now, where they're working, if that's the case, and talking a bit about their experience when they were an LLM student. What they did to better their study skills, how they formed groups to help study, how they improved their English when they were first here, what they felt like when taking exams, how they improved their exams the next semester, hopefully. So feel free to interrupt at any time, ask questions, I will start with the first. The lady on my right is Christina, is from Brazil. She's an LLM from 2007 and currently works at the World Bank. So I'll let you start.
Hello, everybody. I actually was a part-time LLM because while I was doing my LLM, I was also working at the bank. So one thing that I regret, but I was not able to do, it was to participate in a lot of the things that the school offers, because you have workshops, you have, you know, opportunities to work as volunteer in the clinics, and there are a lot of things that unfortunately I was not able to do, and I know a lot of people that did it and, you know, were grateful, and they had, you know, opportunities from the work they did over here outside. One thing that I used to do a lot was to get together with all the students that were doing some classes with me, and sometimes, like, either in the evening or on the weekend, we would get together and sort of exchange notes and study together, because sometimes, especially me, that I come from like a civil law country, and I'm sure there are a lot of you also. So one thing that was very difficult for me at the beginning was, you know, to sort of, you know, what is common law and understand how the common law works once I had a civil law background. So it was very helpful to get together with a lot of other students like JDs and other LLMs that had more experience in the common law and sort of exchange ideas and ask them to help you out. And I'm sure that a lot of them are very nice, and, you know, they will be able to help you not only with the understanding of the common law, but also some of them are native English speakers, and they can help you out with also some of the terms, because a lot of the terminology was also new for me once I studied law in Brazil, and all the terminology in Brazil, it's totally different from what it is in English. So one other challenge was also sort of to learn the language in the legal terms that I'm talking about. So one thing that I advise is to really go and talk to your colleagues and try to find out. And one other last thing that I wanted to talk to you about is also they're out there, like even at the World Bank, some other international organizations, there are so many opportunities as a volunteer. You know, that I know two people here, and actually one of them was Brazilian, that he was working at the World Bank, but unfortunately was like a volunteer, so he was not getting any money. But while he was there, he was able to network, know a lot of people, and he went back to Brazil, and he got a really, really good job. So sometimes, you know, like I know that some people might need the money, but also sometimes if you have some free time, it's a good opportunity for you to go out there at some of those organizations and try to find some volunteer work, because it might help you, you know, to get to know people and also learn some new things and, you know, get people to know you and the work you do.
Okay.
Any questions?
Hello, good afternoon, everybody. My name is Carlos Garcia. I'm a Honduran American, currently an LLM student. This is my second and last semester. Currently, I'm also a Dean's Fellow at the Academy for Human Rights, helping out with the Inter-American Moot Court competition that will take place this summer. So Philippa asked me to come up and try to give you guys, I guess, strategies on how to be a successful LLM student, which was really flattering for me because I never considered myself to be a great success. So yay. Thank you, Philippa. And I guess I will say with, you know, I guess all modesty aside that I worked very hard last semester, and I guess my efforts showed up on my grades. I was lucky enough to get pretty good grades, and I guess I'm going to share with you what I did in order to do that. For starters, I don't know if it happened with you guys, but there's a big difference between the education I had in my university back in Honduras and the one up here. For starters, the biggest difference was the reading. I think my first semester in the WCL, I did more reading than perhaps 3 years of law school back in Honduras. But I did realize, as the semester went along, that reading is the most basic and important thing that you need to do. You really need to have to be caught up on all of your readings and have your readings done for the class. Sometimes it seems like it's overwhelming and it's way too much and it's way too many pages. And sometimes you go through it and you don't even understand what it is you're reading. But trust me, if you plow through, if you keep on doing it, you get to like one sentence at the end of 200 pages and you go, oh my God, it all makes sense. And that's a pretty good feeling. Because you have classes and you have reading and you have all of these activities, I always found it that it's very important to not burn yourself out. And it's really important to have one day a week that you dedicate to not doing schoolwork. Take a day off, go to the museums. DC is a great city. It's got a bunch of both inexpensive and fun stuff to do. I suggest that you take one day a week and that you go do it, you know, whether it's socializing with friends or going on your own to listen to classical music on your iPod and see great portraits of art at the National Gallery of Art. It's really refreshing to be able to step back away from your law stuff and then be able to go get back to it. Another important thing is the use of your resources. The ILSP is one of the things that I love the most about the WCL. I've heard experiences of LLM students from other universities where they show up and they get tossed in with the other JDs, and there's no administrative means to help you out as an LLM or dedicated to just helping out the LLM. I know a bunch of the new guys are working on their memos. One of the best resources you have is Philippa. She's a tough one to get, but if you can get her to read your stuff before you present it, it's the best, absolutely best thing you can do. Also, you know, you've got your reading, you've got your catching up to classes, you do your schoolwork, get Philippa to check it for you. When you get down to exams or to any type of assignments that you have, the most important thing is to read the instructions. Read them extremely carefully, and if you follow the instructions, it makes it easier. And if you get confused on doing something, go back and read the instructions again, and it will help you develop whatever your task is, whether you're doing a 48-hour take-home exam or a 5-minute practice test in a professor's class. So that's the recommendations I would have for your studies. With regards to networking and the abilities and possibilities that you can have, the WCL has a series of events all the time. You know, every week there's just, you know, from human rights to business law, there's always something going on. This is an opportunity to meet people, and I suggest that you take it, not only to show up and watch, you know, boring people like myself talk, but hang around afterwards and go ahead and introduce yourself to that person. Look them in the eye, And you're all, I'm certain, very interesting, unique individuals. Try to bring that uniqueness across when you speak to these people. Look them in the eye and make them remember you. At the same time, try to remember them so that when you meet them, you know, somewhere down the road, you're not like, hi, and they'll go like, wow, you had that great joke. Yes, I think I've met you before. So always try to remember the people that you try to leave an impression with. And if you guys have any questions, I'll be more than happy to answer them. I have very limited experience, but these are, I guess, the suggestions and recommendations I can give you to be a success in the ILSB program.
Hello, everyone. My name is Tina, and I'm come from Georgia, and it's my second and probably the last, again, semester in ILSB. A lot of things have been said, and I'm sure you have from your individual experience, have particular questions. I'll just briefly say how it was for me the first semester, and then let's try, and if you have any questions, try to answer your questions. I'm specializing in human rights here, so for me the first semester was all about getting and absorbing new information, getting involved in all kinds of projects. And I can say that for human rights specialists, if there are any, I know at least one here who wants to specialize in human rights, this school is a fantastic possibility. You have so many people you can approach and ask advice. You have so many courses to choose from. And you have fantastic resources. So. You can say that you are privileged if you are studying human rights. Yes, studies are very important and you should focus on them. But at the same time, it is also very important to sometimes forget about it and then enjoy yourself. Make sure that, it was a problem for me, that's why I'm talking about myself. Try to get involved with your group, LLMs, because you all come from different countries. You are all far away from your country, so you need this closeness together. I was not really that much involved in the first 2-3 months, but now I'm trying to get back.
Now you're cooking spaghetti with sausages. Yeah. Good. You have good times with Tina.
Another thing is that apart from your studies, there are so many, not only events, conferences and workshops where you can go and learn, meet people, but also a lot of other opportunities where you can work or volunteer and enjoy yourself. It's the academy, Carlos said, I'm working at the academy at the moment, I'm Dean's Fellow, Academy of Human Rights and Humanitarian Law. There is a center. There are a lot of mechanisms through which you can feel that you are really one of one person that makes a change and contributes something to WCL. I guess that's it. If you have any questions, just the most important thing, another thing I want to add, make sure to be very careful how you plan your exams. For example, in my country, we don't have an option to choose a date of exam. We have an exam and you have to go and pass it at that time. Here you have this whole 2 or 3 weeks of examination week, and you can go and take your exam whenever you want. Make sure that there are a couple of days in between the exams in order to, especially if it's the absolutely different field, you need time to prepare yourself mentally and physically, to relax, and then I'm sure everything's going to be okay. At the beginning it feels hard and seems hard, but it's not that difficult if you do all your readings and you won't be lazy at the beginning. By the end it's really nice. Thank you.
Okay, my turn. My name is Melania Radonic, and did you have a question?
Yes, I have a question, question about exams. Mm-hmm. And you bring it up. First of all, I didn't know you could choose the dates of for your exams. How does that work?
Okay. Well, if it is in-class exam, then the professor chooses, not the professor, but the registrar's office chooses the day. But if it's not, if it's take-home exam for 24 or 48 hours, you have to choose. You have two weeks, right, or 3 weeks of examination period, where all you have to do is go to the registrar's office on the third floor, get the exam. They will check that, for example, Tina Goletiani came on Friday at 4 or at 3, and you have to get it back after 24 to 48 hours. So.
Okay, and also the other day I pulled up the exams schedule, mm-hmm. and it said something like deferred exam. Like, for example, May 6th, you had, several exam dates, and then at the very bottom it said deferred exams. Mm-hmm. I didn't know how to read that.
My response was, if you have any questions about any about exams, just go to the registrar's office and or the professor. But I mean, with exams, registrar's offices, they are who are administrating exams. So I didn't have that in my practice.
But actually, was the Berenson exam for American legal institutions? Uh-huh. That it said defer, or however you pronounce that. So, I don't know. I'll ask. Yeah. It came to my mind.
Okay, good.
Listening to you talking about
it. It's a good question. I saw that, sorry, just to jump in. I saw that a few times while I was studying. Didn't mean any particular meanings. I don't remember that anything happened, really. I mean, deferment could be that if someone else has other exam, that professor might give you an option to take exam at other time. That's the only logical explanation. And again, I don't have experience myself.
Can I add something? I mean, I remember my time regarding this thing about, you know, you choosing the period that you can take home. It was not exactly like that because some of the professor told us that, you know, like, how come, you know, like, you're going to take it today and then he's going to take it tomorrow, and sort of you can communicate with each other and sort of, you know, get to know what was in the test. But I had a sort of personal issue because my dad got really sick at home and I could not take. I was not here. I had to fly back to Brazil. And when I got back, like 2 months later, I was able to take an exam, but then the professor gave me a totally different exam. So, I mean, you know, they're flexible in terms of you if you have a problem, if you have an issue, of course, they're gonna try to help you out.
Yeah, just to say one more thing on that. Actually, I find that very interesting, but I was going to say that I think the first thing you need to know when you have exams, the professor will give you the instructions ahead of time. The professor will tell you if you have a period of time when you can pick the paper up at any time. If that's not allowed, the professor will make it very clear to you. I think that typically for take-home exams, you are given a period within which you can pick up the exam at any time, subject to your own convenience. And the honor code, you're expected to stick to the honor code. So people take exams on different dates, and it's an integrity issue. Yes, you can discuss with somebody who has already taken it, but you're expected not to do that. And I think that for the most part, I would say that most people keep very strictly to the honor code and don't, at least that's been my experience. I don't know if people handle things differently, but for the most part, by the time you're coming to do your LLM, you're a mature student. I believe most people that are here are people of integrity, and most people keep very strictly to the rules and do their exams on their own. So, but first and foremost, the professor will always provide you with instructions, and when in doubt, always ask. That's what I'm saying.
And again, I'm LLM alumni. My name is Melania Radonic. Originally, I'm from Serbia, and I specialize here at international business law and also international environmental law. Because you do have option to specialize in one or two fields or not to specialize at all, and I'm sure you know that already. Firstly, it's my great pleasure to be here today, and I'm really honored to be able to talk to all of you about those inside tips, how to survive and how to be successful student. I try to take some short notes so I don't repeat my dear colleagues. I will try to be more technical, not because I don't like to provide you idea how to divide your day and be successful student and have great relationships and at the same time in explore this great city. I just personally think that that's very individual, and as you pointed out, we are already mature students, people who finished the law degrees, and many of you already worked as a lawyer, so I'm sure you are very aware of why you are here and what do you want to do and to succeed as LLM students. So we start talking about exams. I will just go back and say that you already got syllabus for all of your classes, and I'm sure it says clearly, first, the way how to communicate the professors. I have great experience, and I'm sure that many of my colleagues are sharing this great experience. People, professors are very open to communicate, to give you information, and they are available for you to contact them. Just please make sure that you are using the kind of communication that they requested in that syllabus. Most of professors prefer emails, but keep in mind that some of them are full-time employed, and sometimes the way they work, if they work, for example, for federal government, they don't prefer you to use the emails. They would prefer to be contacted by phone. So just, again, just follow up the instructions you got. Regarding the exams, instructions are there. Their way to exams could be or written, so you write the research paper, or could be open or closed book exams. Closed books exams are just the regular exams that you had back home. No books, nothing allowed, except the vocabulary, English, your mother tongue language, that's the only thing that you can use. Open books exams, again, it's you will get explanation from professor which books are allowed, so there is no confusing. You cannot be confused, oh, this book is allowed and this book is not allowed. It's very clear, so you would know what could be with you at the day of exam. Take-home exams, again, it's already said, it's 24 hours or 48 hours. It's very clear when you can pick it up. Don't talk to your colleagues because that's against honor code. You might not be caught, and you might be caught. You don't want to be caught, and you don't want to be actually involved in any kind of situations like that. After all, we are attorneys. We are, we are experienced in how to follow the rules. Don't try to, now it's a funny thing, don't try to brainstorm and try to find the easy way for things. We are not the first students who are here. Others tried to brainstorm and it didn't work out. Why I'm saying this? 48 hours exam, take-home exam, means that you have 2 days to take home exam. Don't think if you take it on Friday, because when you work as attorney, it sometimes it says business days. So you know then your motion you can bring on Monday instead of Sunday, because Sunday is not business day for a judicial system. Well, it doesn't work that way here. You have to check out what are the business hours of the register office. They are not open on Sunday, but that doesn't mean you can bring on Monday. So please check the business hours of the register office. Taking on Friday, 48 hours take-home exam means you have to bring it tomorrow on Saturday. So just little tip. Follow the rules, don't try to make up the things and to brainstorm too much. Regarding the readings, you did great thing saying that try to do all of your readings. Sometimes you're not going to be able to all of that, but try your best, because that's part of it is going to have impact on your grades. In a syllabus says that so many percentage of grade is your final exam, 70, 75, 80, 85, that depends on the professor. What that means? Well, that really means that you have to attend as much as possible I know there are be situations that you're not going to be able to come, but try your best to be there all the time. Reading, that means that you kind of have idea what the topic is going to be. I'm not coming. My background is not common law, it is civil law. And I'm not used to that you read first and then you come. We are kind of used to that, and mm-hmm. you come to the lectures, and then you're kind of looking at the professors and kind of brainstorming, okay. Well, the point here is that oh, okay, it comes during the readings. No, it's not that. No one expects you to understand. That's the whole point. So if you come to the lecture thinking, gee, I really don't understand this at all, that's the whole point. Well, at least you have idea about that. So when the professor comes, he or she is going to explain that part that you didn't understand. And it is very important to read for second reason, so you can raise your hand and ask the question, exactly what you didn't understand. There is no stupid questions, they're not, oh my God, I don't think so, I should ask. That's the whole point, that's what's called participation. Just be open to that, I mean, no shame, no nothing like that. I needed time to adjust to that, because that's not the way I used to study back home. I mean, it was more like, oh, if I raise my hand, that means I'm stupid or I don't understand because I didn't do this and that. Here doesn't work that way. They're really open for that communication. What else? Regarding American legal institutions, now I'm touching that. And I see my dear colleague who was here last time when we had this panel. I got that feedback that was very useful. And if you're a first semester student, I know you are, because that's the way we kind of recognize each other on the hallways. First semester students are very frustrated because we have to write open and closed memo. And not just that, that's extra pressure, because it's very time related, but it's also time consuming. It is also something that you are touching unknown field. We don't do that in most of civil law countries. So you have to research the case law, and you have to write in the way that you are not used to write. I don't know if you're already introduced to that IRAC system, which means that you have to say everything in the first sentence and then repeat that in the end, and that frustrates you so much because you spend so many hours. I'm talking from experience, that's what I did. There is a group of five people, we have that law firm session, and after that and before that, we talk about how we don't agree with that. We disagree with that. Well, we are lawyers after all, so we have right to disagree and agree. But unfortunately, that doesn't apply. No one cares do we agree or disagree. That's the way the system works in this country. And I tell you one thing. As soon as you open your mind and say, okay, it's not about do I agree or disagree. Do I think this is smart or it's not smart. This is about opening our mind, learning the way this system works. So tomorrow when I market myself as attorney, back home or here, this is a plus because I know how they think and how they expect me to write. Just please keep that in mind. I know it's frustrated. I was super frustrated. I tried to kind of ensure my professor that this is not the right way and that's not necessary to be that way. Well, doesn't matter. Only thing that matters is that it's very useful later when you try to get your job, or maybe not immediately, but you go back home, you start working as a lawyer in your law firm, and suddenly there is a case and you have to work with American law firm. Guess who is going to be first on the list to represent the law firm? You, because you know how Americans are thinking and how American law system works. Second reason why it's important, a professor tried to ensure me that a blue book is supposed to be my best friend. Trust me, never became. Plus, I don't like blue anyway, so it didn't work. So, but one thing I learned later, when you start writing your research paper, first because that's a requirement. You have to have research paper in so many pages to be LLM, I mean, to get your degree in the end. And some of the exams are research paper. Guess what you need to write a good research paper? Good citations. Understanding where is what in that blue book. I mean, I don't know the blue book just by closing my eyes, but at least I still remember those pages where the most important citations are, because you are going to need that. For two reasons. First reason, because that's a requirement. Second reason, to get a good grade. Professors are having huge amount of research paper they have to read. As better as you write it, the easier it's going to be for them to read. So they might not really pay attention on some small mistakes you made, because you made that research paper easier to understand and read. And second reason, of course, later, if you try to get a job, even as an OPT, and you're trying to get there as an intern, they ask you for something, what did you write? Most of the time, they don't ask you to give you a research paper 35 pages long, so that open and close memo, that case brief that you made, it's very useful. You can supply that to get your job. So try to put that frustration a little bit on the side. I know you cannot avoid that, but just open your mind. You're here to learn something that you won't be able to learn if you didn't come here to study as a lab. Regarding the participating in the things that are going on in WCL, I totally agree. There are many things that are wonderful panels. Try to participate as much as you can, but there is one very important thing. Not only what is already organized, you can organize the thing. I saw last semester new LLM students did great thing. I'm very proud of them. They are actually the first one who organized the international law review by LLM students. Never happened before. They only had the international law review done by JDs, and some of the LLM students participated. And that's a great thing. And you know what? The WCL is open for your ideas and your everything that interests you, every topic that interests you. I'm sure there is at least 5 to 15 students that would like to do the same thing. Talk to ILSP staff. We are fortunate to have them here. You mentioned that one. I'm sorry, I don't know your name, but I'm Carlos.
That's a pleasure. Actually, I'd like to interject momentarily and point out that last semester I came to this same panel, and Melanie's words actually helped me out a lot. They inspired me sort of do well. So thank you for helping me out.
You're very welcome. I'm really happy that works out. And you said that there are many great things in WCL, and what I like that you highlighted something that maybe you're not aware of. I applied to GW. I'm not trying to say they're bad or anything like that. We are not getting money here for introducing WCL. We are just sharing with you wonderful experience. If you are studying an LLM student in some other schools, sometimes you don't even have a right to apply for the same classes at the same time as JDs. Here you know how it works. Okay, for your first semester it was tougher because you came later. But for the spring semester, just depend on your last two numbers or last number of your student ID. No one really bother even to see are you JD or LLM, because we are equal here, and that's wonderful. And you have wonderful staff, ILSP staff, Philippa, Rosie, Kathy, I don't want to miss anyone, Professor Bradlow, Alana Wong. They are wonderful. They are here to help you out. Tell them if you are interested in some. Did you see that wonderful movie on the YouTube about LLM studies? Isn't that great? It was cute, great presentation, but didn't happen because ILSP program organized. That's because LLM students said, hey, we would like to show we exist, and we would like to show to everyone that we have a great time. If you have idea, go there and say, "We have. I have idea, I would like to do this or that." Because that's something special that they offer here at WCL. just think of what else. Regarding English language, Filipa is great. Knock on her door. She's very busy because she is great. But try to communicate with her, and she's very helpful. Million thanks for many things, and for many students for the advice she gave. There are also a few things that, honestly, I realized that maybe even a few weeks ago. There is a book that I'm sure you all purchased, I purchased too. Shame on me, I haven't opened it during the LLM studies. Help me if I'm wrong with, or someone remember better. There is a book about English language. I think the author name is Gillinger or something like that. You were required to buy that book for American Legal Institution. Haven't opened it, too bad. First 50 pages, it's super helpful for your research paper. You know, we all have different approach to writings in our country, and there says exactly how the paragraph should look alike. When do you use one, and when do you use A, and things like that. So it's very useful. Just take a look if you have a time. I'm sure you don't have much of a time during the first semester, but it is useful. What else? Enjoy, build your friendships. Don't waste any moment for, sleep. Well, I was almost said, don't waste any moment for sleeping too much. Yeah, you won't sleep too much. You don't have time for that. But explore this wonderful city and all the surroundings. It's not that far away to go even to New York City. Your transportation is great. Spend time with your friends, and because you're going to build friendship for the rest of your lives. If you have any questions, go ahead, and I'm sorry that I really used a long period of time, but just feel like I would like to share my own experience, and hopefully it's going to be helpful.
Okay, I guess if there are no questions yet, I'll pick it up from there. My name is Tomi Ojoade. I'm from Nigeria. I started the LLM program spring of 2006. I'm done with my coursework. I still have a couple of papers to put in before I'm fully done with the program, and it's been an extremely great experience for me, and I'm very happy to share my experience with you. Even though my colleagues have covered so much, I don't know what to add to what has already been said, but I guess you have a different perspective from me, so it's worth sharing. I came in from Nigeria just about 3 months before I started the program, and I guess the first advice I would give that worked for me is setting a goal. I believe in that very strongly. I think that if you don't have any, you don't create any expectations for yourself, then there's really nothing to reach for. I feel that if you don't set any goals, you're more likely to fail than if you do set goals. Having said that, I feel that it's important to make sure that the goals you set are realistic. You know, you don't overreach to the point where if you're not able to reach those goals, you're disappointed. So set realistic goals. Determine what you want from the LLM program. Some of you are here doing the LLM program because you feel that it's going to make you more marketable when you get back home. So your focus is getting through the program, doing well enough to be able to use the skills you get here when you get home. Some of you are here looking at the possibility of breaking into the market in the U.S. Your approach is going to be different if that's your goal. Making it more practical for me, when I came here as a permanent resident, so I knew I wasn't going to be going back home after the program. So I decided to do the LLM because I wanted to have some American experience that I could use to get a job in the U.S. So the first goal I set for myself was to try to do very well, because I knew that I would be competing with American-trained attorneys looking for jobs in America. So I felt that for me to give myself an edge, I needed to try to do extremely well and have something more to add to my resume. So that was my focus, and that was what I was trying to achieve. And I worked very hard to try to achieve that goal. So you know what you're doing the LLM for. You know what you want to gain from the LLM program. So I'll just say try to outline that so that you achieve everything that you hope to get from the program. I come from a common law system, but even though Nigeria is a common law country, the teaching experience is very different from what it is here. So I guess I can understand some of the challenges that the civil law students have, but it's very different if you're from a common law country, but you still have challenges just because the method of teaching here, the style is totally different. So there is some adjustment to make even if you're from common law countries. But I do have to say that I've having trained or gone to school in Nigeria and having the opportunity to come to school here, I think it's a very wonderful experience. And if you're able to maximize the opportunity, you really get a lot from it. A lot of my my colleagues have touched on preparing for class and what you need to do, so I'm not going to go so much into that, except to reiterate that I do feel that it's important as much as possible to do your reading assignments before class. I just feel that you're able to benefit so much more from your classes when you've done the reading ahead of time. And there's so much of an emphasis in over here with class participation. The truth is, if you don't do the readings, you can't participate in class. You don't even know what the conversation is all about. So for you to be able to enjoy your classes better, it's really, I would definitely recommend trying to do the reading assignments as much as possible. Yes, it may be difficult to cover everything, but try to at least have a broad idea of what the class is going to be about. I would say that, especially for the first semester, I would actually recommend as much as possible to do all the reading assignments. When you get a hang of things, by the second semester, you find out that you don't need to do as much because you're kind of already familiar with the style and you have a better approach. But for the first semester, definitely try to do as much reading as you can and participate in class. And I'm talking about class participation because I guess a lot of people are feel intimidated. It's very natural, especially because of the JD factor. Actually can be intimidating because you're in a class with JDs and LLMs, and obviously the JDs, they know their way around, they're very confident, very eager to answer questions and show off. I'm just kidding, really. But seriously, just kidding. Are there any JDs here, by the way? Actually, I'm just kidding, really. But the truth is that they're used to the system, they're familiar with the system, they know how to work the system. So you're coming in as an LLM, a foreign student. You probably have a foreign accent, so you think that the best thing is just keep quiet in class and listen to the JDs doing all the talking. No. Don't. It's natural to feel nervous. I remember the very first class I signed up for, in the syllabus, the professor had made it very clear that class participation was huge, and I think it carried like 25% or more of the course grade, and she was really, really particular about it. So I was like, oh my god, I have to talk in class, what do I do? So I would do my reading assignments and think ahead of things I could say in class, questions I could ask, comments I could make just to be able to contribute. And of course I was nervous, of course I was, very nervous, especially the first time. But then I found out that it wasn't really that bad. And fortunately, I would say that the environment in WCL is great, maybe because they're used to having international students. So nobody really looks down on anybody else. At least that was my experience. Even if you don't speak English very well or you have a foreign accent, I think people tend to make more of an effort to understand other people and communicate very well, so you're really not made to feel stupid or feel like you're inferior because you're not American. So I think it's a very good environment, and I would encourage you to feel free to speak up in class and ask questions, and don't worry about feeling stupid or feeling that your question is a very dumb question. I don't think that really it's hardly ever an issue. And since I've talked about the JDs, I will say that they're a wonderful resource, and I would say take advantage of it. Don't restrict yourself to your comfort zone, which is probably sticking with the LLM group. Interact with the JDs, you learn a lot from them, and they have a lot to learn from you as well. So definitely make them your friends, and take advantage of the skills and the familiarity they have with the system. They're very helpful, and for the most part, they're very nice and very eager to help. At least that's been my experience, so I would definitely say take advantage of that. For those of you that are extremely busy, I'll just like to use myself as an example there. First semester, I didn't do anything except schoolwork. I wasn't working. I made sure that I focused solely on my academics the first semester. I didn't do any internships. I didn't even try to get any jobs or do anything other than get into the system, get a feel for what it's like here, because I think it's very important, because the first semester can be a little bit rough just because that's a period where you're kind of settling in, adjusting to the new system. So as much as possible, I would recommend that you spend your first semester just focusing on your schoolwork and taking advantage of the programs organized by WCL, which are very useful and very helpful. For me, after the first semester, I was able to start exploring other opportunities, looking for a job, which and I did find a job. So after my first semester, I was basically schooling part-time and working full-time. That may not be an option for some of you, may not be something you want to do, but I do have to say that, and I'm sure that you'll agree with me, once you start working and schooling, it's hard. You can't really take advantage of the programs as much. You can't really enjoy the program to the full. That's the reality. So it's a give and take. If you choose to go down that line, you just bear it in mind that some things are going to have to go for you to still do as well in your school work. So that's just something to have at the back of your mind if you do decide to look for work part-time or full-time while you're schooling. And I would also say that even if you're in school full-time, if you're able to spread your course load over three semesters, personally, I think it's more, it's advisable, it's easier. And if you have to do it in two semesters, well, good luck. I'm sure you can work it out too, but I guess you just have to put in more effort. Another thing I did want to mention is that for people from common law countries, you're not required to take the American Legal Institutions class and the writing and legal research. Even though it's not recommended, it's not mandatory, I would highly recommend that you take at least the one credit writing and research class. I didn't have to do it, but I chose to do. I didn't take the American Legal Institutions arm, but I did take the legal writing class. And it was a lot of extra work. Yes, the open and closed memo and all that, especially for somebody that didn't have to do it. But I have to tell you, I had no regrets at all. I'm so, so glad I took it. For me, because I already knew I was going to stay back and work here, it was very important for me to learn the American style of writing. And even for people that choose to go, that need to go back home, it's so helpful in all your other courses. You're going to be writing, you're going to be doing research papers, so why not take the advantage early on to learn those tips and rules that help you out with your writing and make it so much easier with all the paper classes and other writing courses that you have to do. So even if you don't have to do the legal research class, I would recommend that you take it. It is a lot of work, but it pays off in the long run. So I definitely would recommend that. And finally, finally, as everybody has said, I think the greatest thing that you probably will get from all of us here is that we've done it. If we've done it, then definitely you can. Some of us are done. Some are about finishing. Some are still in school. But I just feel that if, as long as you can have one person who can tell you that, look, I did it, then you can do it too. I was telling you before about the different things I was juggling. I was working full-time throughout my program. I don't think I ever took less than 6 credits in a semester. I had kids. I had one while I was in school. I was commuting about an hour and a half away from school. It was a pretty crazy juggling act for me, seriously. But somehow I made it work, and I didn't fall back on my schoolwork at all. So definitely just to encourage you and to reassure you that you can definitely do it, and you can do very well. So all the very best, and hopefully if you have any questions or there's anything else that any of us can help you with, I'm sure that we all will be available even after today, email, anything that would be useful to help you as you go along with the program. But all the very best.
Okay, I know everybody's probably tired, so I will try to keep it short. My name's Sally. I am Egyptian-Canadian. I think I'm probably one of the only panelists who went to law school in Canada or the States. So I'll just, I guess, everybody pretty much talked about what I was going to say, but I'll just let you know how I've approached my exams and what worked for me in law school, and it's working here as well with the American professors. I basically didn't try to do all my reading before class, took notes in class, took notes on my readings, and compiled everything into really big outlines. For me, I don't like to study from a textbook when I'm preparing for exams. I don't like to have to flip through a book while I'm taking an exam. So I put everything in a pretty big file, documents. But that works really well for me. You can search that way on your computer for whatever topic you're trying to write on. And for me, that's been the best thing. I know on the WCL website, I think that it's through the library link, there's a collection of outlines that students have posted. Where some of them are for the classes that LLM students take. I know I have still all my outlines, so if anybody emails me, tell me what class you're taking, I can definitely share those outlines with you. I did one for American Legal Institutions, Berenson's class. I didn't have to take it, but I took it to help prepare me to, for the bar exam. And so I have a pretty detailed outline for that. So if anybody needs it, just email me. My email's in the Facebook, the paper one that's in Eleni's office. That's really, I think, the biggest recommendation for exams that I can give you. That it won't work for everybody, but it's a good way to organize and review, even for taking exams. Other thing I was going to say is, when I was registering for classes, you hear a lot of people saying, don't take this professor, don't take this class, it's too much work, you won't do well. And in my own experience, it's always been the opposite. When someone tells me, don't take this class, it's too hard, nobody gets A's, nobody gets B's, everybody gets a C, don't listen. Definitely, if there's a topic that you're interested in, I know it's a little late for this semester, but next semester, go to the class and see for yourself. And if you're willing to do the work, it will pay off. People try to scare you. So. And I guess the only other thing, it's not really academic, but the way that you get to know your classmates is definitely outside of the classroom and outside of the law school. So there's always social events. Make sure you go to at least a couple. There's something for everybody. I know the class of 2009, there's a Facebook, like online Facebook group. If you're not part of it, search it and join it, and you'll see everybody posting events. And that's really the way, I think, that you get to build bonds with your classmates. It's not in the library or in class. So I think that's all I have to say. If anybody has questions, I won't be at the reception tonight, but do email me if you have any
Yeah, about the outline. What's your what was your area of specialization?
I'm doing.
Oh, you're still working.
Right now, it's international business. I was here as an exchange student last year, and I did all basically human rights. Mm-hmm. And I'm doing a lot of environmental this semester too. But so it's all over the place. So. Yeah, I definitely email me and ask other students. I mean, I think everybody's willing to share. We all want everybody to do well. It's not competitive. That's not like if I do well, no one else. You know, so ask people and ask the JDs too, because I think that's how they normally prepare as well. So it's really useful.
I promise to. Don't want to make up. My name is Richard Graham. I come from China. I want to touch some issues, probably particularly related to Chinese students or maybe go broadly to Asian students, because I noticed that not a time, the first thing they come to this country starting off, the first thing they typically feel is English itself. So I want to address that issue first. My experience is different. When I came to this country, I didn't come to school directly. I find a job and then work in a law firm first. And then I get used to the legal environment here and I know what the lawyers doing here, what the law firms look like, and what the expectation they are looking at. So after 3 years, I started, you know, looking for school and came to this school. So that's the advantage I have before I come to here to study. With that said, I would say, you know, most of the Chinese students feel English is the most difficult thing. So how to improve your English? I have to say English is the most important, no matter, you know, you are going to work here or go back your own country. I would feel, you know, the English, it's not necessary you remember some rule or you're going to, you know, improve it suddenly. It's just take a process. And for me, I would think most important for me to improve my writing and oral English. It's for my writing, I just do a lot of like briefing, write, paraphrase the cases, and do the writing on your own. The more you write, the more you can think in English, and the more you can, you know, write in the American way or the English speak, you know, American native people's way. So that's all I can say. And they're taking some classes. Helpful, I would think just the practice, write, just keep writing and take notes, you know, and do your own briefing, do your own outline, and that's the only way you can improve your English. And for the oral English, try not to be too shy to speak, and especially for some classes, some professors, the teaching approach is like you do presentation or do some lesson, you know, trying to get front of it, trying to do it. Don't afraid you're going to mistake. I still make mistakes these days, you know, in my work, still working in the law firm, and my partners keep telling me, you need to improve your English. So I'm still working on it, but that's the way, yes, you have to do it. And that's the first thing I want to touch. And another thing I want to touch about writing the papers for the exam. I feel sometimes we have a tendency to write what we know from our own country, from your own, what's your subject you're familiar with. For example, I actually go one class, it's called Washington, actually that's from the non-government program I took. I was, when I'm trying to, you know, find another topic for that class, I was thinking, keep thinking, okay, I would write something I'm familiar with from my own country. But in the end, I feel I could not find, you know, sufficient reference or the materials here to do my writing. So I waste a lot of time to doing research, but in the end, I give up. So my advice is, if you're studying that subject, and I'm trying to write for that subject because the American law, it's so rich in the case laws. You will find a lot of things to do your writing. And so trying to do, you know, comparison. Okay, I'm doing comparative. No, I'm doing, two things. But you, at the end, you're saying, how can I make that 15 pages, 30 pages bigger? So I'm exhausted my topic. I'm exhausted my, you know, the thoughts I want to put it. And also the things, like, we're from the civil law system. The way we write is totally different from what we're going to do here. The Chinese writing, you know, a lot of students have a tendency to put their thoughts in Chinese and translate the ideas into English. I don't particularly, I don't think that's a good idea or, you know, a good way to do your paper. You have to, you know, train yourself to think in English and try to, you know, write in English. How do you do that? And I would say, you know, just practice writing. Do your, you know, outline, do your, you know, briefing, and that way you are training your brain to think in English and write your paper. So I think that's all I want to touch, and I think I'll make the closing argument. And here, in closing, it's challenging to, you know, studying law here in the United States, but it's rewarding. Okay.
Any questions, feel free to ask. I have a couple of things that I always get asked when I, the most common questions I get asked, usually in about the second or third week, is, firstly, my English is terrible. Everybody else speaks much better English than me. I need help now. And the other thing is, I had to write 3 30-page papers. I've never written any 30-page papers before in my life. What do I do? So if you could address any of those questions. And any of you who have jobs or internships, if you could talk about a little bit how you got started to get those jobs, how you networked, that kind of thing. Very useful.
Any takers?
Yeah, okay, I start. Someone has to start. Regarding the first question, that sentence, almost people freaking out and they think the English is so bad. Usually it's not as bad as you think it is. I'll give you just one example. I had a group assignment second semester. We had a hard time in the beginning. It looks like, oh, it's going to be very smooth. Different speaking, people from different backgrounds, they were all with a different experience also, because some of us, it was 5 members of the group, were freshly from the law school here at LLM. Here I am with some years of experience, and the person who had like a real experience in his government back home. And we divided the assignment, and everything looked like, oh gee, this is going to be super smooth with no problem. Suddenly we didn't get a response from some of the members, and it took some time, because you're also very busy and you go through the stages, oh my goodness, why this person is not a participated, my grade depends on that and stuff like that. I'm also touching on other issue right now regarding the group work, answering actually your question. One of the members said, gee, I'm going to do everything by myself because I cannot depend on everyone. I want a super grade. You know what really helped? When we sit down and really honestly talk to each other. I said, okay, do you want to exchange the assignment so I do yours and you do mine? Actually, the answer was, I think my English is so incredibly bad that I don't want to put even one sentence on the paper. I don't want to screw up your grade, and I don't know what to do. You see, the support of each other's support, when someone tells you, I think my English is bad, because we all feel like our English is not so great, it's actually to talk about that and to work together. So share your experience. Maybe you did something great and that helped you to improve your English. okay, I came in this country before I started studying LLM, so I had that advantage that I took books from the library. You don't have time for that because you have to take law books from the library, but reading improves your English. Listening to the radio stations and talking to your friends helps a lot. Please do not speak Spanish if you are a Spanish speaking person. And you do that. Please don't speak French if you speak French. I was fortunate, there was no one who speaks Serbo-Croatian that moment, so I had to speak English, but trust me, that would help me a lot. And I started kind of teasing my friends when they speak Spanish, I can say a few sentences, como esta, and stuff like that. But I started teasing them because I tried to help them. I said, no Spanish here, we speak English, I don't understand you, you're offending me. Well, they didn't offend me, but please don't speak your mother tongue language. Speak English, that helps a lot. And regarding that group assignment, talk about that because everyone has the same feeling. We were all scared that we are going to make such a bad writing in English. And you see what happened, that our assignment was a little bit postponing. We did everything on time, but just because two members were scared to death to put anything on the paper. Just because they felt that their English is bad. I don't know, that's my kind of approach. And again, talk to Filipa. There is an English professor, Mrs. Hayen. I know you have to pay for her class, but trust me, professors are really open to help. If you see her on the hallways and you ask the question, she will be more than glad to help you out. And again, that book that I cannot remember the name of the author, but helps a lot because you can read about the way how you're supposed to write. And that's not the book for LLM, that's the book for JD. So I'm sure someone else has different experience.
I wanted to share something with my colleagues. It's something that really helps me out because we have so much to read for classes that when you get home and you want to practice your street English, you don't feel like reading or getting a book. I usually, something that I do and helps me relax as well, is just grab movies and just put the captions. And you're relaxing, you get home, you're tired, but you're still working on your English, you know, and you are listening and you are reading it. And I don't know why, but it really helps you, you know, pick up your language abilities. So, I don't know.
It is true.
Yeah.
And don't feel surprised if you get extremely tired at the end of the day. Tiredness is not just because you have been at the school. It happened to me, again, highlighting, I haven't come to this country and tomorrow start LLM. So, I supposedly was ready to listen English, classes in English all day long, but it was very hard because you have a feeling like, I don't want to hear anything anymore in English. Just speak other language. I don't understand. But that's just because you got so tired of listening, and that's great advice. If that helps, you should try that because exactly, you learn English, but at least you're just reading, you're not trying to push yourself to listen.
And sometimes you read, sometimes you don't read. But
absolutely.
The job issue for those that are looking to maybe get internships or eventually maybe do an OPT and work here. I would say that the very first step is taking advantage of the workshop, the resume workshop with Adriana, because definitely before you start sending your resumes out, you need to know how people like resumes here. In Nigeria, I was very used to the 2 to 3 pages resume where you put your life history on your resume, your hobbies, whether you're married or you're single, you know, all that stuff. So it's absolutely unnecessary here. And so you need to first learn what they expect, what employers want to see on your resume, what kind of words to use. That was a very first thing I did, and it was very helpful. Adriana really helped me brush up my resume and helped me to focus on the strengths, the things that would, you know, catch the employer's attention, because obviously there's so many people applying to jobs. And then taking advantage of the career resources here. My own very first job opportunity actually was with a job that had been advertised on one of the career links that gets sent out, I think, every 2 weeks. I don't know if that's still...
E-Career.
If that's E-Career. It wasn't even E-Career. There's this newsletter that Adriana sends out every 2 weeks.
Network.
Yeah. I had been going over, you know, checking... Don't give up. I had been checking so many times. I didn't even... There weren't things to apply for. And then eventually I found this job. It was an internship that was advertised for an immigration law firm. And I had taken a course in immigration and I had found it very interesting. I didn't have any experience, but I enjoyed the course. I had written a paper for the course. So I decided to apply for this internship and I was fortunate enough to get called for the interview and meeting with the attorney. She was so impressed with my work and with my writing sample, she decided to offer me a full-time job instead of the internship. But they were paying me peanuts. They were paying me practically nothing, but I was more focused on getting the experience, and I felt that it's a stepping stone. I felt that once I was able to build my experience, I would be able to eventually get a better job, a better paying job, and probably a job that fit better with my qualifications. So I would say that when you're first starting out, don't be too picky. Look at the big picture and look at where you're going to, because where I started definitely wasn't where I wanted to be. But I'll say that the job I have now, and it's my third job now. I moved from the first one to another law firm, and I'm with a new law firm now. And it's definitely more in line with where I want to be long term. So you may need to start small, but just look at the big picture. Once you're able to successfully break into the market, even if it's through an internship, you have a much better chance of landing the dream job later in the future. And another thing I'd like to say, in terms of if your focus is on getting a job, especially a permanent job, then you definitely need to really focus on your grades, because I don't know if that has been your experience, but I know that one of the things that really stand out for employers is your ranking. Your class rank, your GPA, and your overall experience, you know. So definitely, if that's something that you're looking into, I would say that work very hard on getting good grades and getting a good GPA.
I just want to say a few things about the English, and also just add up a little bit on the career, what you said. In terms of English, also one other thing that some of my friends used to do that was very useful to them is to try to find a JD or somebody that's there, who is a native speaker, and try to set up like 1 hour every week, you know, with that person to practice your English in some, you know, like let's say, you know, you're gonna read a paper on this topic and you can discuss that topic with the person, you know, so it help you out to sort of improve the English. And I always ask, you know, native speakers to sort of help me out in terms of, you know, if I make a mistake, please correct me. Some people do not like that, but I think it's very important, because sometimes you don't realize that you're making that mistake. And, you know, like my boss nowadays is American, and he corrects me all the time. One little mistake that I make, and you know, sometimes I'm starting to pay attention more to it, because sometimes I change like the use of since and because, and he always, you know, like he prints out the paper and he comes to me and say, because of things. So, I mean, it's always, you know, like, even in Portuguese, which is my native language, I always, you know, make mistakes. So don't be very, you know, particular about it. Don't be very, you know, like, trying to be perfectionist, because you have to try, you know, and the more you practice, the more you're going to learn, and the more, you know, you're going to be able to speak. And also, one other thing that I used to do a lot is, like, talk to the professors, and sometimes if you are able to write your paper ahead of time and go to the with the paper to the professor, sometimes the professor gives you a lot of comments, not only in English, but also in terms of, you know, what you can improve in the paper. It's very helpful. And I did that. I was not able to do it with all the professors, but I did that with at least two, and was very, very helpful to me. about the career, what, you know, besides what Sharedi said in terms of what Adriana does over here. I say Adriana because she's Brazilian. I mean, that's the way to say Brazil. You know, I know you guys say Adriana. Anyway, it's besides of what she does, and she's very helpful because she all the time, you know, sends me stuff in terms of opportunities that, you know, might have in my field and all of. One thing that I want to share is, like, I actually, my, you know, my focus over here was in human rights, but I also was able to get a great experience. Last year I spent 4 months in Africa working as a volunteer for an organization that deals with human rights violation, and doing that helped me to actually get another job in the legal area in the bank, which I'm changing in March. So, you know, like, the sometimes that's what you said, you know, like, the little experience that you have, even though it's not in the field that you want to, you know, that will count towards, you know, your resume and for future things that you're gonna, you know, be willing to do in the future. So, and also check out, you know, check out, like, as I said, not only the World Bank, but also I know a lot of people that work for the Commission of Human Rights that is also here in Washington, the OAS, the Human Rights Watch. There are so many other organizations that if you just go to the webpage, there is over there either, like, internship or volunteer opportunities, you know, and you might be able to explore those things.
I would just add a very technical thing. I know you are overwhelmed with things that you have to do for school, but I know the majority of LLM students are not residents of United States or citizens. Some of you are, but most of you are not, and you know for that option that's called OPT. Don't wait for the last moment to apply for that. I spoke to many colleagues of mine, and I know they were very stressed. I don't know how that works, but please talk to Adriana, because they are due dates and deadlines. Don't put yourself in a position that you get great offer, but then you didn't apply for OPT papers and then you didn't fill up the forms on the time. It's very technical things, but I know those small things sometimes get lost in overwhelming things that you have to do for school, but it is very important. There is an option to make a business card. I'm not saying go ahead and spend money. That's not for free.
I think the WCL actually have a conference with
some small firm that will make your business cards. If you have your own from the back home, they're good as well. But I think it's nice to have WCL ones, just because you're presenting yourself at people here at to American people as a member of this community. So you have, you are getting degree here in United States. Why is important to have a business card or any kind of business cards you may have, is just because we are attending many presentations, panels, and round tables here in Washington, D.C. People like that. And you never know who may actually get in touch with you over the email. You may think, okay, I just met a person, but they might have a position that is not advertised at our newsletter or things like that. So it's good to network. Network really means a lot in this country. I have great experience working as a Dean's Fellow here at the WCL, and also that NGO, Center for International Environmental Law. There are a few NGOs which are really in love with the WCL. Take advantage of that. Why? Because some of our professors are greatly involved with their work, such as Center for International Environmental Law, also Inter-American Development Bank. They really like to have interns from our school, our LLMs. So keep yourself updated with whatever is going on, and keep in touch with Adriana Vito. Everyone said that, but again, very technical thing. I don't know, call me organizational net, you know, like a net. I like to be very organized. but helps a lot. Don't wait for the last moment for that resume to be reviewed. It might happen that you have to apply for internship. You just realize its due date is 3 days from now. Oh my goodness, Adriana, I need you. And she has a tight schedule because there are many LLM students. So try ahead of the time when you have a week that is a little bit less stressed. Contact her, make the appointment, and go ahead and spend 30 minutes talking to her regarding that resume. It just pays back to be ready when the time comes.
Real quick, I wanted to address a couple of things. Number one, let's all say hi to Kathy Schenker. And number two, with regards to the question Filippo asked, with regards to having to write three papers of 30 pages, whereas you'd never written, you know, a paper of 30 pages before. I have good news and I have bad news. The bad news is that you're gonna have to do a lot more reading. The good news is that we're not doing quantum physics here. You know, we're not inventing the wheel. It's not coming up with something new. There are plenty of scholars out there who have already reviewed what we're going to write about and have written extensively on it. If you use your resources, if you stick to these citations, you will realize that a lot of your material will just come from all of your readings. And you're going to be quoting and you're going to find it very amusing that you're writing a paper and it's your paper, but a lot of what you're saying is sort of putting somebody else's words into your paper. And obviously you're not going to steal them. We do not want plagiarism. I'm sure you've heard about plagiarism ad nauseum. But the more sources you have for your paper, the easier it gets for you to write it. And you'll see that as you read more sources, they sort of all come together and you eventually end up lining them up and having a paper of your own where you express your own opinions, perspectives, and illustrate them with all that. So don't get overwhelmed. You know, it's very easy to do so. It's very easy to say, oh my God, I've got all this work. And it's just as easy to sort of look down instead of looking at the great picture and look at the small picture and be like, I need to come up with a topic sentence for this paragraph. And once you start writing that first paragraph, you'll see that the narration is going to flow a little smoother after that.
Go ahead. And I wanted to talk about an issue which for me was important a couple of years ago until I came up with the answer. When you have to stop researching, because there is a time where you have read so much, so many books, so many articles, you just don't know anymore. But still, especially with the open memos, there is always the point where, is it enough? Where should I stop? And I always give, I was told that by my Jessup Moot Court coach, and I'm going to tell you this now, that you should end your research, or you think that you have read enough, when you see that your citations and your sources are one and the same. When you see that this author is citing somebody else that you have already read, and that author also cites somebody else that you have read, that's enough. Sit and write. And another thing, just make sure, it's my personal experience, I know it depends how people write and how they approach. For one paper, I need two weeks of not doing any other paper. I cannot work in two papers simultaneously. I know people that can. For me, it's impossible because when I'm doing something, I'm concentrating on one topic and working. So make sure that you schedule your time as to accommodate your possibilities and your requirement. Mm-hmm. Just that's important.
Just one technical thing again. Here I go again. Great advices, and just on top of that, use our library. I don't know, have you realized already, it's not just what our library has. Our library has connections with other law libraries in the Washington, D.C. But then again, the timing is very important. Do your research, see what books do you need, and then immediately post the hold for some books in a matter of few days. Sometimes needs only 24 hours, sometimes it's up to 5 days. You may get the books that we don't have in our law library, Penn Law Library, but GW, Georgetown, even I think there are some sources also, Library of Congress. use that advantage. If you're somewhere outside of Washington, D.C., and there is no, like, so many law schools, you won't be in that position. So the sources are unlimited. But then again, you have to know when you limit to yourself.
Any other questions? Go ahead.
Yeah, during the class, I feel like kind of catch the concepts as same as the other teacher, and that sometimes that makes me really frustrated because I think that this is another way to make a successful class work. And as you know, some of the professors are really fast, so even though I record the whole the lectures, but it's really hard to understand what they want, what they said, and the other things. So could you give me some advice about that?
I have two words for you: office hours. One of the great resources that you have outside of the classroom is being able to go to your professor during office hours. And if there are certain concepts in the class that you didn't understand, or that perhaps you'd like explained even fuller, you know, you like something that the professor talked about, then you go to his or her office. They have specific office hours set up. And professors really appreciate when you go to their offices ask them more questions or to expand on what they said in class. It allows you to stand up from everybody else in class. I understand, you know, how sometimes it can be like a little intimidating or embarrassing to ask in class, or how sometimes you feel that maybe you're holding all the class back by asking your question. So if you have that, you're feeling intimidated, then I definitely suggest that you go speak to the professor one-on-one. You always have the opportunity to do that, and it's a great way to stand out from amongst your classmates and to learn a little more.
And try to openly talk to your colleagues. I mean, I just have a great experience. We used to exchange our notes. I mean, not entire class, but at least fewer of the colleagues. Because it happens sometimes that you get few of the most important points and others are getting other most important points. I think at least LLM students are very open to... I'm not prejudiced regarding JDs. I just didn't have experience. I haven't... Well, there are a few classes that were more JD students than LLM, but my personal experience, I had a great relation with my colleagues. So try to talk to them and try to compare your notes. This is your first semester.
Yeah.
There is also possibility of something else. It happens to me that I was very under the pressure that to write everything. Fortunately, I write fast. I don't type that fast, so I was mostly writing. That after a few weeks when you start reading, you just realize there is so many things that you didn't have to write down because you already read that in the book. I think it's also pressure of the first semester to write everything down. I think over the time, in next few weeks, you will realize that you are making decision what is important to write down and what you already read in the textbook. I think this is just because it's beginning. I know it's more than a month, but...
If I can just add something, I have a good friend of mine, English is not her first language, and she does a lot of interviews for her research. She goes and speaks to people and records the interviews. And what Carlos was saying about going and talk to the professor, I think some professors don't realize that they're speaking fast, so even if you go into their office to ask them for help, they're going to speak at the same speed that they were speaking in the classroom. So she went to the main campus, I think it's it's an office for students with disabilities, and they gave her software that she takes the recorded interviews and she can slow it down. So as slow or as fast as she wants. I don't know, I'll try to find out the name of the office, but I think there's only one center for students with disabilities on the main campus, and they gave her the software for free.
I just have it. You're talking about interviewing others, not the professors.
No, but if she's recording the lectures.
Because I think for recording the lectures, you have to get permission.
Yeah, I mean, okay. I think the professors do. You have to ask permission. But if you have permission and you're recording and it's okay,
yeah,
and you want to slow it down, I would if all of that is okay, then go to the main campus.
Well, actually, so you probably don't even have to go to the main campus.
Oh, no?
Okay. Yeah, you can probably just go to the Office of Student Affairs.
Okay.
Where you have Dean Jaffe, and a woman who works in his office is Laura Hartz. And Laura handles any students who have disabilities, and so she has access to whatever they have, whatever facilities they have on main campus, and so she can get them for law students.
Yeah, and just to add one more thing on the exchanging notes thing, because I think it's a very good idea, but I would just encourage again, try not to just limit your circle to the LLMs, because probably a lot of them have the same issues that you have. Most of the foreign LLMs, English is not the first language, so there's a possibility that they may not get as much as the native JD students. So I think it's still very good to be able to have a couple of JD students that you know are regular in class, that you know take good notes. And I think for the most part, maybe not everybody, but for the most part, they are willing to share. The only caveat I would add is that to a certain extent, it's give and take. If you're asking somebody to give you their notes, then I think that you should be willing to share yours as well. You should be willing to do your own work. Nobody, I think, wants to do your work for you. So if you're going to be exchanging notes with people, then you should have something that you can help the other person with as well. So do your homework, and people will assist you as well. JDs, LLMs, I found that to be the case with most people. There may be exceptions where people don't want to share, but I think for the most part, people are willing to share their information as long as they don't feel that you're taking advantage of them. So.
Just to add a little bit on that, what I mentioned before also, I mean, I used to have like some group studies that would have JD, because I took some like family law and some other classes that majority was JD people. And we used to get, you know, like in groups, as I said, in the evening or on the weekends, and study together. It was very, very helpful besides exchanging the notes. And one other thing that I would suggest, I know that for a lot of people, especially coming to the U.S. for the first time, and you know, like going to classes and listening to Barrison talking, for instance, it's very difficult to listen. So I mean, just you know, like besides trying to go to him and ask him to explain some things that you didn't get during class, also try to tell him that you're having, you know, a hard time in understanding. And you know, a lot of the professors are aware that most of students, especially the LLM, they are foreigners, and the English is not that, you know, first language. So just ask the professor to sort of slow down a little bit, because they are conscious about, you know, the fact that English is not your first language.
Yeah, Professor Ali was great. I think it happened a few times in the room where we had the class international trade law. For some reason, it was very hard to hear her in the last, you know, line. So someone complained, and she was very nice. So we figured out how to put the mic, and she was talking on the mic. So sometimes he's actually just up to saying something.
I also want to add that, because I'm pretty, you know, independent. When I was studying here, I was working, and so I really don't have that much time to come in with other students or to borrow notes. So what I did is pretty much prepare your own notes or outlines before you come to the class. And sometimes you were, you know, when you take the notes, some people can do that, you know, can dig it every single word. But let's try not to do that. You know, you prepare your outlines, you know what's the key point there in that case. And then you compare, you know, take the most important things from what professor said. Then I just combine the notes to my own outlines. So I think that will help you to understand.
I have two questions, actually. The first one is, I come from a Commonwealth country, and, well, there's, in my university back home, there's a standard. You know, the lecturer or the professor gave you a question and there's a standard. 3 pages and you're good. So that means it's possibility you getting between an A and a B. 1 page, you know you're not making it. So I'm wondering if there's any similarity here at WCL in terms of how much do you write for an exam question, like one particular question, rather than...
Professors are very specific. You know, if you read your instructions, they'll tell you the average length of the answers, and they'll usually tell you, like, you know, in your take-home exams, we expect this answer to be between 10 to 12 pages, something like that. And then they'll tell you if they include footnotes in that count or not. Some professors, when they write papers, try to give you a word count as opposed to an actual page count.
Yeah, I haven't ever taken an exam here where they haven't specified how the page range. So I really doubt that that will be a problem for the most part. They always tell you the range, the minimum and the maximum, so you have an idea when you're on track and when you've gone over track. So
they even tell you what is the font, which is New York Times. And they tell you how big the letters should be, usually it's about 50. Please don't be smart, make it smaller or bigger, because they pay attention. And second reason why is, and I think I mentioned that already regarding the citing, if you make those letters very small because you want to fit in 17 pages, they said your paper should be, the length of your paper should be, you're making extremely difficult for them to read. So the paper might be very well written, but it's so hard to them to read because your paper is the 50th they are reading. Please just follow the rules. And they are very, I mean, one thing I really appreciated, there was no confusing about how to do the things. They always tell you which books are allowed, how long is what you have to write, so just follow their instructions and don't try to be innovative.
I think it's also WCL, if you link to the library website, there's something called, I think, is it Ye Olde Exam?
Yes, book? Kind of funny.
Yeah, and it's an exam collection. There's not every class, but you can go and you can look at old exams from certain professors or certain classes, and you'll get an idea of what the exam will look like.
But just idea. Don't expect the same thing. I'm not talking about same question, but it's just kind of idea how the questions look alike.
My second question is, actually, do you find it better, like, for the summer, to take courses or to just enroll in a summer program that gives you credit for that particular?
I took summer course, but that, I would say, rushed one. So it wasn't like summer semester, entire summer semester. I think WCL every year offers environmental courses, which are 3 weeks, human rights, and also international business law, actually, / arbitration. It's nice because you actually have the rest of your summer. They're also good and bad part of everything in life. So it's a little bit pushy and stressful because it is 3 weeks and you have the exams and everything kind of, you know, squeezed in 3 weeks. Would I recommend? I would. My experience is great. I really had great experience. And professors were great. Yes, it is a little bit tiring because sometimes you may end up having classes from 9 o'clock in the morning until like 9:30, I think, but it's useful and it was nice. I don't know. I didn't take the entire semester. There are some courses offered through the semester, so it's regular semester. I don't have experience about that. I don't. Anyone else can.
All right, we have to stop here before the next panel starts. But if anyone has any other questions, we have 10 minutes before the next panel starts, and you're welcome to talk to our panelists. I know Tomi has to dash off, but everybody else is very welcome to stay for the reception tonight, including you guys. So a big round of applause for our panelists. Thank you very much. We'll see if you already know Kathy Schenker for the most part.
Professor Elijah, director of the ILSP, and Professor Diego Rodriguez Pinzon. And Professor Rodriguez Pinzon is also an LLM alumnus from 1994. So if you have any questions about anything regarding alumni as well and staying in the United States, becoming an academic, he is the person to ask. Shaker.
Hi, everyone. You do all know me, and you've heard me go on and on a lot about what professors expect of you. So I'm actually going to keep my comments extremely brief and pass the mic on. But the one thing that the alums were mentioning before, which I think is so important, is to go to office hours. If you don't understand something, go speak to your professors. They expect you to approach them. They want to be spoken to. That's why they've become professors. So have no fears. Just go up and chat with them.
Moving on.
That's going to be very
Well, one of the, I think the major surprises that I see in all students, but particularly my LLM students, because you come in into a class where it's, the JDs have already had a year that they have sort of gone through this culture shock, because for them, it's, law school is a culture shock as well. And for you, even though you have a law degree, I think how we teach law here is different than most other countries. And first of all, of course, you know it's more interactive than possibly that it's been. You expect more questioning from you. I must tell you, I did at one point teach a course in Israel, and I was there just for a very short time. And there, the students couldn't stop talking. And even if they didn't know anything, they were always arguing with each other. So I was, for at some point, that was the polar opposite of what I expected outside of the United States people to be. So even if they didn't have any idea what they were talking, they still would talk to each other. So I think it's very much a cultural thing. And most of the LLM students, I can't generalize because it depends what country and what culture you come back, but it's it is more of a, I've seen it's more passive respondent. I listen for the professor to lecture and then we respond, but that's not how we work here. But one thing that I have noticed is that it's very important to arrive in class on time. Very important to not chat with each other during class. Believe it or not, this becomes an issue. I don't know why, but especially culturally, I see people chatting with each other. Maybe it's because they don't understand or there's something going on. But it's I see that amongst the LLM, some of the LLMs more than I do amongst my JD students. So I don't know, that could just be coincidence. It could be that you are used to larger classes, but it's very, very disconcerting. So even if it means chatting, I hope that you know they probably are doing it by the way. They're probably e-messaging the JDs. These are the cosmetic things. But what is really important is when I usually get the LLM students coming to me afterwards and saying, I knew trade backwards and forwards, but I still didn't do as well as I should have on my exam. For one thing, of course, I don't give all A's. I mean, maybe some people do, but I usually think they think that they've done badly if they've gotten a B, B plus, which I don't think is a bad grade. But they say, I learned so much. I knew everything. What was the issue? The learning the law is not, it's just the beginning stage for us, not the end, right? And you may know the statute, you may know the law backwards and forwards. First of all, this is open book exam. Nobody's going to ask you to memorize it. This is not going to, nobody's going to be testing you on the substance of the law. Of course you need to know that. I'm not saying you should know that. And you shouldn't think of it, you know, I'm going to go learn, cram at the end of the course and understand. At least this is my course. Every course is different. And I understand what the law is. That's just the beginning. If you're going to start cramming to figure out what the statute says near the end, you're not going to do it. You're not going to write an A paper. Because what we're really testing is first of all, it's not clear what the law is. I mean, we all come, some of it's not, maybe it's a civil law, common law tradition, it's not clear cut. The statutes are vague, the cases go all over the place. So the question is, how are you able to massage all of that you have learned and apply it to the fact pattern, to the situation that you're faced with. We try to make it as real life as possible. And this is something that you can only get to, it's a stage that you can only get to if much earlier in the semester you've already mastered the law, know what it is, deal with the conflicts, understand the different inconsistencies in it and in these cases. And then the challenge, and all of that is assumed that you know. So what it's testing you then is, How does it apply to this situation, which is novel and new? You're going to get a fact situation you've never thought about. So you're in this position as a lawyer would be, dealing with a client they have found. Now, unfortunately for you, you only have like 3 hours a day to deal with this. In real life, you may have a little bit more time, but not necessarily so, because sometimes you need to give feedback right away. So the question is, how do you... That is the speed at language level. This, we are not testing you. I mean, knowing the substance is one thing. Being able to figure out how you make your arguments. And there's no correct, and in my exams, I don't expect a correct and wrong answer. What you figure out what your goal is, how do you want to get there? It's an advocacy training. How are we going to get there? Now, at some point, you just don't have the facts. You don't have the facts or the law that can get where you want to go. And you can say that. But this is the best that I can do, even if it's stretching things. These are the arguments that I can come up with. Okay? So the only way you can get to that stage is if you are keeping up with the readings, of course, and you actually have understood you've understood it beyond just the letter of the law. So it requires time. It requires focus. It requires talking to other people. I really encourage study groups. I encourage people to arguing with each other about what exactly all of this means and arguing with me. Because that's how we grow and sort of get a different understanding. You may think you've understood it, but not if you actually think about it and argue it. And in my class, I actually give you actual factual pattern to apply it to. So there's some problems that you may end up from time to time looking at. And of course, finally, you need to look at some old exams to figure out about the application. But don't look at the old exam before you have mastered the stuff, because you're going to confuse yourself. So read, understand, read the cases, and at the point where you think you're totally prepared, then you start to question, to come up with examples of scenarios that you, by looking at old exams, and a lot of old exams are there already, where you can take the exam to figure out how the application process works. Because I think a lot of people, after they take the exam, they're like, God, I learned. You know, I learned this. And it could be, and it's supposed to be a learning experience. But it depends how much of, it's going to be a learning, how much of a learning experience. If you're going to spend the time figuring out and just telling me what the law is, it's not going to give you as much, you don't have as much depth as somebody who has actually tried it and has gone, you know, has understood it and has understood the complexities of it. Now, I understand that this is maybe somewhat vague, but in the context of at least what classes I teach, that is the difference between people who actually feel like, this is where I see that some LLMs just don't understand, because possibly they think the exam is, I learn the statute, I read the cases, and I tell you, you know, what the law is or what the law, what the, you know, what the statutes provide. But that's not everything. That's not the, that is a pass. But that is not that additional element that only comes with revisiting, rereading, re-understanding, re-examining, questioning. And sort of, you have to bring yourself, we teach people to be advocates. So it's not, you have to come out of being a law student and learning the law, but sort of being an advocate, sort of bringing, how will I use the law for a particular purpose? Not having, also, I understand, I mean, law school is kind of a synthetic atmosphere, so you have to explain what you're learning. You have to be an advocate. It's like in real person, in real life, you're trying to make an argument. At the same time, you need to show off to your audience of one that you actually know other things that you're not mentioning. And why you're not mentioning them is because you don't think that they're good enough arguments. Now, in real life, you don't tell that to a client. That confuses them. But you sort of, it's an art. You sort of have to understand. I understand. You have to sort of explain your process of thinking. That's what I'm testing. How much complexity did you understand? Did you just tell me what the statute says and what the case says? Or do you actually move beyond that and say, well, I went through this thing and we thought about all these issues, but we think there are downsides to these, so we think the best way to approach this problem is through this course. And these are our strong arguments, these are our weakest arguments. But you can only get that to that if you have kept up, as I said, with the reading and sort of engaged with the interaction that has been going on. It's hard initially because you have to first understand what the law is, what the cases say, and then you get to that stage of being able to utilize it in a way that's most effective. So this is one thing that I think as an LLM possibly, because our JD students, some of them aren't very good at it either, but it's sort of, they get used to that shock of undergraduate education where they're told, you know, I learned the stuff, I'll tell you back what I learned from my teacher, to I learned the stuff, I told you everything I knew, but that's not enough. What's enough is, well, so what? How do you bring what you know to make yourself a good lawyer? I mean, it just basically is teaching, it's a thinking process, an analytical, which, what did you think first? And then, of course, how do you express it? How do you write it? So taking a test and testing yourself, sort of writing and the speed at which you come up with things. So I think even for some who have English as a second language, it even makes better sense to have a higher mastery of the law. So you don't have to worry about what the law is, but sort of worry about massaging how you're going to make the arguments and the language that you're using. Now that I've totally been vague, you'll all know what I'm talking about when you take your exam.
Something like, for example, you will give a B, let's say, this is my argument, that's it. It's based on this statute, on this, on that. But if you don't think about other possible arguments that they are going to tell you, you got to say, okay, this is my argument, but I have considered your other possible arguments and other defenses, but this is what I would say.
Precisely.
Right? Like, is
yes.
That?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
And you got to attack, but you got to defend all possible other arguments.
All possible arguments. I know that in real life you may not do that to confuse people, but in sort of you sort of show yourself the mastery of all.
Yeah, but a good lawyer is that who thinks of all the possibilities and chooses.
And many times, yeah, you're right. Many times people tell me, but I knew that, I just didn't write it. Yeah.
Well, I can't know that you knew that or you thought that, right? It's expression, exactly. But even in sort of reciting the law is not that clear. So we said, well, it depends. It's been interpreted this way, and then it's been interpreted this way. If it goes down that route, then we can succeed here, but then they can respond to us this way if we go down this route. That's the subtlety. That comes with, I think, more preparation and knowing this. Because during exam time, there's too much stuff going on. Sometimes you just sort of get cold feet. You don't know where to go first, right? So if you have prepared yourself, if you have taken sample tests, if you have engaged in that argument, if you have thought about the other side, because you're going to face new facts that you haven't seen before. Mm-hmm.
Now, on that point, just to make a comment, in exams, and based on what you are saying, it sometimes depends on the way in which even the professor structures the examination. One thing could be instructions to engage in an advocacy piece, sure, to defend a position. But even in the setting, if you are in the real world, in an NGO, with an advocacy piece, you will try to present a very strong position before a judge, before a panel, etc. In class, I think you have to acknowledge, in some ways, using sometimes footnotes or comments, the other position to a certain extent. You have to get closer to a memo. to an internal memo. You have to anticipate the arguments and show that you are thinking about the others, the other positions' arguments, because as you were mentioning, definitely in law, and particularly I would say international law, you have a lot of gray zones. There's always a possibility to have several visions of the same problem. And to acknowledge those in your piece is a way of showing knowledge. Not acknowledge the law, as you were saying, that it doesn't exist. The law exists based on an argument, on what you are structuring, and you can show several laws around the same problem, and you can defend one position in an exam. So again, if you are in an NGO probably litigating a case, you will probably keep for yourself a lot of information in your litigation, not to give some hints on certain aspects, or sometimes you are trying to be more open. It depends on the setting. In class, it's good to acknowledge the other arguments. And there are many ways of doing it, through footnoting, some keywords, etc. That could trigger, say, this person definitely is looking at the different options regarding the same problem.
To this extent, it's not real life. I mean, you have to understand that you are also testing your knowledge. It is really, you're right, a memo, sort of internal thing, even though the question may say, be an advocate. I understand, at least I do, sort of responding that you're not, that you're also showing off that you also thought about those other issues and those other things. Not to miss making your primary argument, which is the most important part. You shouldn't forget your own advocacy, but sort of being able to see what's your strongest argument, what's your weakest argument, what's the other side's strongest argument, what's the other side's weakest argument.
In real life, you can say, well, what they reply will say that. But you don't get that in an exam. You know, you can anticipate all those steps. You know?
This is something that I've noticed that some LLM students come to me. And I've had people that have come and gotten like a B- or something on the exam, and they've gone through the exam, they've looked at it, and the person has gone off to do really well. Because it's, and then she says to me, this person, I just didn't know this was how I was supposed to take the exam. And she ended up getting an SJD from here because she was, you know, she's really good. But it's just a matter of getting used to the person involved. That person was actually from Thailand, but it could have happened to anybody. But she, it was a different approach to exam taking.
Just to defend that position, really, I just wanted to say, like, coming from a background that I came from, professors hate other materials. So when you have an exam, they like, you quote what's in the book, you quote the statute, you quote the relevant cases. Any outside material that you may have read that's pertaining to the topic at hand, they try to disregard that and let you know. They don't need that in their exam.
I don't want anything outside either.
So it's just the course material they want in the exams.
Yeah. Same here.
Will you downgrade?
Not necessarily, but I've noticed that people don't necessarily do better when they go outside. I think they just wasted time. I mean, it's not a requirement for this. I don't know if I downgrade. Sometimes, most of the time it ends up being a downgrade because people go off on something that they have read. Some comments, some policy paper that they read somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think one interesting thing that I'd like to hear from the two of you is not so much, okay, this is finals, which you don't have to worry about quite yet. But leading up to finals, how, let's say a student is having trouble understanding the basic materials. The student is missing what is the actual law, just because you're going over cases, you're not saying these are the elements of something. Maybe you're speaking very quickly. The student's just having trouble understanding the basics. So what do students do? What do you recommend that students do in those positions, in those situations?
And I want to go back also to some of the comments that were made before, and I completely agree with you that the expectation in an exam is that you would master the materials that were given to you. I would say, under very exceptional circumstances, you could contribute to improve your position with some relevant external material, but it has to be extremely relevant to a certain extent. I would say that those materials should be brought in class Because the idea, of course, is to benefit many of your peers in class with maybe external materials. And as you were mentioning before, the format in US teaching allows for extensive interaction in class. So there is no reason why these things, for example, external materials, couldn't be brought in class and discussed. So at least my expectation is that anything outside the materials really has to be brought during the semester, not during the final exam, like an ace out of the... No, the idea is to engage in an interaction with your peers to talk about the issues, to counter and challenge your peers and your professor. I think that's part of it. And that's a unique thing. When I came to study here in the LLM, I was coming... I'm originally from Colombia, in South America, and my JD is from Colombia. As it happens with you, probably, many of you, that type of teaching didn't allow for this type of very intense interaction and contributions by students in class, properly speaking. That we were supposed to stay passively saying that contributions come from the professor. We are here to take note, find the law, and then answer by memory. Literally, you know, it was a completely rigid, and we are talking about last century, of course. We are talking about more than 20 years ago. But it was a very non-dynamic setting. To come here and begin to see a completely different way of interacting was extremely traumatic for me. And for, I remember my peers, we were discussing, I'm sure you are doing exactly that. How should we do it? How far can we go? Etc. We simply began to test the system, ask questions. That we, I remember sitting with some of my peers saying,
"And don't be annoying."
No. But pretty aggressive. Say, listen, we should almost ask two questions per class, more or less. Each one. Let's see what happens. And then, of course, there was just a rigid approach also to the whole setting. The dynamic began to change in those classes. Real relevant questions began to be posed. Discussions were very interesting. I remember having a very interesting experience, not only from my professors, but from my peers. A lot of people began to bring their experiences from their own countries, not even challenging the professor and saying, in my country, this is what's happening right now in environmental law. There are some laws that say this, that, regarding what you are saying. How would this be relevant? I think that, or I have a criminal code that has this provision in my country. So not all countries have universal jurisdiction. Listen, you began to bring a lot of the comparative aspects that you bring here, being a diverse group of persons. You bring a lot from your countries, which is a fascinating exercise that you don't see easily. So that's why I think this very active, open setting of discussion is extremely productive if you know how to use it. The other side, as you were mentioning, is to go beyond that. When you began to talk too much or make irrelevant questions for the sake of it. And there's a very fine line, and you see it, and we crossed it. To be very frank, then, we had to retreat, of course, after testing, because we were trying to re-engage in a different way with our professors. This is to say, this is a very open academic setting. You can ask professors, what are the rules of the game? How is the exam? How long is it going to be? What is going to be covered? You know, very direct questions. You have to test your professor and ask him or her what are the rules of the game, how you are going to be evaluated. Nobody's going to get offended if you are asked, you know, how are we going to deal with the exams or examination, evaluation, participation in class during the course. I remember that was one of the problems. We didn't know if we could ask a lot of these questions, you know, to ask the professor, how is the exam? What are the rules of the game? How are you going to assess participation? We are 100. How can you assess participation? You know, that questions, which are real questions in many circumstances, don't stop there. You know, professors here are used to those questions, and we should answer those questions. They are very important. And this comes also to the substantive part. Bring to the table things that you think are really relevant. Don't withhold information from the professor and from your peers. It can be extremely relevant, and then it can enhance the experience later in the exam and in the future. To act collectively, that's my perception. If you study, try to study in groups.
Yeah.
I know that there are different approaches. But I think it's extremely interesting. You have 9 to 12 months, not only to engage in this, but to get to know your peers. This type of exercise, you know, studying with groups, engaging with your peers regarding a class, is a good pretext to get to know what they are doing. Many of you have been working in your home countries in fascinating NGOs, government, etc. You are going to have very little time to extract that information from your peers. This is a great way of getting to know in depth what your partner is doing in their home country. They come from doing that, they're going to go back to do that probably. So try to do that. This doesn't mean that you don't have to study by yourself. Just simply create some spaces of interaction in groups, which I think are extremely important. Just to mention a couple of those.
Yeah, I mean, in response to Kathy's question, everybody, don't think it's just LLM, everybody doesn't understand what the stuff says for a while, whether it's the first time you're studying in English or not. Everybody has problems. Sure, it doesn't make sense. At least, for example, the area I teach in, it's got its own language, it's got its own verbiage, you have to get used to it. So there's no question, you shouldn't be worried if you don't understand. If you understand something very clearly, be worried. You have to stop.
I mean, I think when there's certainty, usually there's a problem.
So I see no problem with uncertainty and understanding. Now, sometimes if somebody speaks too fast, tell them to slow down. I get excited, I speak fast. Just say, raise your hand and say, can you slow down a bit? It's not a problem. We'll slow down. Because you don't notice what you're doing. It's not, you're not self-aware in that way, unfortunately. Especially the more interested they get. I've been teaching something for like 11 years. Of course, maybe I go over some of the things fast because I feel that people have understood. You haven't understood it, stop it. Talk after class, talk before class, but also talk to each other. Talk to each other. The most effective study groups that I've seen, and study groups work for some people, doesn't work. And study group mean different things. Some people study together all the time. Some people only meet to discuss something that maybe is difficult for them. And some classes require people to do things in groups like mine does, which is sometimes works and sometimes not, because it's not a group that you have chosen. It's a group that randomly has been chosen. But I have noticed that people who come to me in my office hours, in a group, or a group can be two people, they do better because they sit down and they say, we have these questions, we've been discussing it, and you can see that one of them says, I told you so, that this was the thing, and the other one says, I told you that that was not what it was meant. So to come, to sort of have a discussion, to have an understanding, it is not as useful to come and say, I just don't understand anything that's going on. I mean, if it's that the case, you're welcome to do it. But to try to sort of and talk to each other and try to see whether you can figure something out and then come talk to somebody. Of course, you're concerned. You're always welcome to discuss things and this. But I've noticed that if people start to, for example, analyze a statute together and they're studying, and there's a disagreement, for example, as to what sometimes something means, people may not realize that they didn't understand something. And then they come to me and I say, yeah, well, you're both wrong, or you're both right, and this is how something works out. That seems to be a good approach. You also don't expect to, for example, in my class, I think, and I hope, things come clearer towards the end. So it doesn't necessarily, there may be times when you're just thinking, what the hell happened today? I don't know what exactly transpired. But it helps to have done the reading before class, tremendously, obviously. And it does help to go back again afterwards and sort of look and see if one understood. And then those people who are prepared are the best for me to help them. But if you have let something go, I've seen people come for like, I have not seen them in class, they haven't been participating, maybe they haven't been reading for various reasons, maybe there's some problems and stuff, for a month or so, and they come in near the end of the class and they ask some very basic questions. I don't see a problem with it, you should just start asking, but I can't be as helpful, right? I can help them, but I can't bring them up to speed. If you wait that long, I can't bring them up to speed in an hour meeting to make up for, you know, lack of participation or lack of, these are common sense things. But I've noticed coming together in groups and then coming and asking questions, and I can do, and I do that usually in your exam time, works really well for me and for them too, because I, sometimes people ask questions and have discussions about things that I haven't thought about. I mean, there's no way that we know everything. This just doesn't exist. I could have, I sometimes have taught something for many years, and then I have a student who raises an issue that I've never thought before, and I see something in a completely different light than I have never thought before. Why did that person ask that question? I don't know. But that's how they, that's something they saw that nobody else has seen before, and I learned tremendously from you as well. I even learned from mistakes that you make, because it's sort of, why that was that mistake made? Maybe there's something in the way I teach or I convey that information, especially if more than one person misunderstands me. So there's no, and it's no problem, I have no problem in telling you that I don't know something. I don't know it. And we can learn it together if it's something new, because the world is dynamic. The stuff that you teach, especially in international economic relations, is rapidly changing. And I have experience, which you don't, but you have a clearer brain than I do. Less garbage inside of it, probably. So maybe together we can figure things out. I see it as an enterprise that we engage in together.
That's true.
What about outlines?
I don't think taking somebody else's outline is very useful. Personally, I think the process of making an outline is itself the learning process. That's my experience.
What about looking at an outline before a class? Sort of getting somebody else's outline at the beginning of a semester and going through it as you're teaching.
I think it depends on the course, You know, it depends on the course. There are some basic courses that I think are very useful to have outlines. For example, for any international law course, you know, either human rights, environmental law, international business transactions, you need a basic international public law. And these have very basic notions that you have to know. You know, what's use quotients, what is customary international law, sources of law, how do you construe them, some basic cases, the institute. You need to know this information, which is basic. For that type of course, I think it's very useful to have a basic outline. There's so much in international public law that, of course, each professor can design a course differently. I remember when I studied, human rights was not in the picture. We dealt with the limitation of borders, maritime delimitation, two or three notions, and that was it. It has changed dramatically since then, how international law is taught. But I think in that type of course, an outline can be useful. If you get, and that's my perspective, into human rights, that could be a little bit less important, because you are not in the business of covering specifically a topic and exhausting it. You are trying to induce a way of thinking that particular field of international law. So in human rights, you are trying to induce the use of some principles that can be helpful to solve different problems in the field, and to identify those principles in different treaties, in different norms, in different instruments, or in different cases. So that's why an outline may not be that useful in a human rights course of the sort, the type of course that we deliver. I don't know your perception about outlines.
I don't think there is.
No?
I wouldn't. I think that spending time reading an outline before my lecture, mm-hmm. instead of actually looking at the cases and coming to it with an open mind, clear mind, to sort of see what you get out of it, I don't think it wouldn't help me. It never helped me to look at somebody else's lens of what it is that they learned. But everybody's different. I mean, it wouldn't have helped me.
I think the nutshells, for example, can be useful in some aspects,
yeah,
more than an outline.
Yeah, and the nutshells kind of give you a background, general reading background of something. I wouldn't mind that there's a international business transaction nutshell that's for trade and investment, one that's pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Everyone knows about the nutshells.
They're small books, this big. her soul card, not sure. Sort of give you a background, but it won't. I mean, it's just very, very basic.
Yeah, very basic. And then there, you know, you have some bibliography you can use to begin to go in depth in certain areas. No?
Yeah, but I wouldn't do extra reading unless, I mean, I don't know. In my case, I wouldn't tell them to. There's so much to read for the course anyway.
For example, in my human rights course, some people have not taken international public law because it's not a prerequisite. Mm-hmm. In those situations, I strongly suggest some of them to get at least the international public law nutshell and maybe suggest a couple of readings.
Yeah.
It can be gone very quickly. At least they will be prepared with some of the most basic notions. But otherwise, as you say, you know, the materials are perfectly sufficient, and we only expect, for example, for students to use the materials. It's open book.
Right.
They can use other things, but the materials are enough.
Yeah.
If you are going beyond that, you are taking a risk of bringing irrelevant information.
You're really true. It depends what course you're in. If it's an advanced course of any way, and you think you don't have a background, and you wanted to ask the teacher for some background or read through some background, it really depends upon the course.
Yeah.
That wouldn't be, I mean, for me, that wouldn't be an outline.
That's not enough.
That's not enough.
Outlines, I don't like.
No.
That's a, you know,
it's a
previous background in order to understand.
Outline may work at the end of the semester when you've already mastered the stuff and you want to look at somebody else's outline or outline to see what you may have missed or what they have organized. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just want to add, for the course of Professor Lai, we compared 4 or 5 different outlines at the end of the semester, and that was really useful because there are so many mistakes in the outlines that you really can use them as a starting point of a great discussion. So I believe, especially in her course, I took 4 courses here, and there the group discussion is really worthwhile. And also to have, just to make your own outline then where you're discussing it, because it's a 48-hour exam, it's useful to, in all these pages, because there's a lot to read, to just have something where you can always go back to, because the time is limited too.
So the outline is useful for the exam-taking purposes, but I think see it being useful at the beginning before you know what's going on, but maybe at the end when you're trying to sort of synthesize everything. It's useful, but you can't rely on somebody else his outline to understand the course. That would be a bad way of going about it, because I can guarantee you won't understand things correctly. Another thing that I haven't said that we should talk about is about papers. I mean, some of the courses are seminars and you have to write papers, and that's another completely different issue. Paper writing, research writing, some people have no experience with it. This is not unique to LLMs. I see JD students who haven't had to write research papers. And this is a process that you have writing instructors here that talk to you about that, so we won't take much time, but I still have, we're struggling. Your first point is to come up with a thesis, a topic, a question. I always tell, ask the question that you can operationalize within the allotted number of pages. What do I mean? Ask a question that you can answer within those 30 pages or 35 pages. If you ask a question that's not capable of being answered, you are wasting your time. You're going to spend half a semester writing something that's descriptive, that doesn't make sense, doesn't have a beginning and doesn't have an end, doesn't have a... And then you sort of figure out, then you get freaked out and you have to start it. So there it really makes sense to... And the hardest part is just to read, figure out what is it that you're writing about, come up with some kind of a question, like, you know, is human... You can't have a question, is human rights and trade during the regime compatible? This is not something you can operationalize. That can be your general area, but you have to then talk about it within... Does the case of EC beef shed light on how WTO's view on, you know, human health can affect. So you deal with rights issues as well as health issues, but you have to come down, figure out a particular case, something that can be operational. But even then, you sort of may realize that that's too broad. And at that point, you got to start outlining your answers. But in order to be able to know if you can operationalize or not, you need to have some understanding. You need to have research. You need to have read. You need to be able to get things out And this is something that I think is something that writing is difficult. Don't think seminar writing papers is easier than exam taking. It's just that you need to think about it in a different way. And you know, people are very, very careful about citations. We deal with that. Of course, we talk about plagiarism. But plagiarism is means a lot of different things to different people. Sometimes you may have heard something. You think, by 7 months later, you think it's your own idea. I mean, I'm serious. It's very possible that one gets influenced by things that one's hear. And you want to surprise oneself then into being challenged as this is something that you should attribute. You should be attributing. So it's very important to be familiar. At least in this culture, we have this necessity of citing. So being familiar with the literature that's out there. So even if you don't know you're plagiarizing, there could be charges anyway that you are. And of course, some are just blatant problems. I mean, if you bring in another thing that a lot of people do and that I do too, that's very dangerous, but it's very good, is as I read, I take notes. I take detailed notes from books and articles. Cite, put the citations in there immediately. Page numbers, okay? Because after you forget where you got this from, you cut and paste in your paper, and then suddenly you're dealing with, you know, Richard Hugo coming and saying you took this from some website somewhere. When you don't, you know, you've changed, things have been changed, but it was cut and paste. So you immediately write, immediately, where you got your sources. Sometimes you get lazy, you can't figure out where in the hell you read that thing. So anytime you take notes, which is fine, citation, citation, citation. Page number, citation. Keep record of your research in a very detailed manner so you know where you went, what you read, what you looked at. And the page numbers, it's going to save you a hell of a time. I know it means that you don't begin writing immediately, but it makes your life much easier then.
On topic selection for papers, for example, I think if possible, you should write about something you already know. Something you are familiar with. If you are trying to background on something that is completely unknown for you, you run the danger of getting overwhelmed by the topic selection itself, you know, very broad. Usually the topic is extremely broad topics. Or you should really try to get into something that you are familiar, that you have worked for some time in some shape or form, even in classrooms, and then you would be in a safer spot. You can contribute more and you will know what type of literature is in place. You will be able to narrow the topic for the 30, 35 pages much, much easier. And be careful, as you say, with the plagiarism. You have to be very careful how you do your research. If you come from a continental law tradition in Latin America, for example, you don't usually work as well with citations. The standardized citation systems are completely different to those in the Blue Book here. And they exist in some countries. They are not standardized between different... Each country may have a different type of citation. So you have to really work with what you have here. Learn the Blue Book, I think, is a very useful tool to a certain extent. In international law, it has a lot of problems, as you many have seen, but it's good to learn. There is one experience here in the law school that I don't think many of you have used. There are possibilities of engaging in a law review editing position. Usually they are reserved for JDs, but for example, the International Law Review, the American University International Reviews, has several positions, editing positions, for non-JDs. LLMs can do it. Even there's a possibility of doing it in Spanish, for those that speak in Spanish. This is the only law review that has a Spanish component, which is unique. In your own language, if you speak Spanish, you will be able to develop and do this exercise of being an editor in a law review. And for those you probably don't know, it was, you know, for me it was also a surprise to see the importance of working in a law review, in a student-run law review, to be a student editor. You have seen Barack Obama says above everything, you know, yes, I was a politician, but I was the editor, the chief editor of the Harvard Law Review. For a lot of people around the world say, but why is that important? You know, he was a student in a newsletter, more or less. No, it's critical. It's very important. It's one of the most important activities in a law school. And the fact that you are able to engage us, international LLMs, in editing certain papers, either in English or in Spanish, will teach you more than you can learn writing a paper. The experience is absolutely fascinating. So talk with the people of the Law Review. You can access the board. You can ask about the Oxford Press, their reporting positions about the human rights.
There's a human rights brief. There's a business law brief. There's the international legal studies. Now they're going to
the thing. There's the ILSP law journal
that they just started.
Yeah, exactly.
So try to write for this journal. I think it's a great opportunity to get one's word out. And especially given how tough the world is becoming, I think being, as I was telling some people, finding something that's happening new and novel and writing about it is a good idea. Hmm? Getting your name out there is just a good idea. And there are opportunities to publish while you're students here. So I would definitely do that. And then the second thing, we've got a wonderful ILSP staff here that are here to help you. I mean, there's this person here, Philippa, who does enormously good job in sort of being a tutor in terms of you're looking at the papers and looking at outlines. But I know that Kathy does some. I mean, there are others, people. There are Donna and what's her name, Marlene. So there are a lot of wonderful people here who can. I mean, so if you're ever in debt, nobody can write something perfectly. You need somebody else's eyes to look at it. And somebody else will not write it for you, but there is an opportunity. Writing doesn't come without practice in any language. So it's something that you need to take advantage of.
Many of these the briefs, small newsletter, are indexed and they are searchable through LexisNexis. Someone makes, you know, on international business transactions in Brazil, if you have an article there or in a law review, both will appear as part of your research. So you put your name outside.
Forever. Literally.
Yeah, Google. It is amazing. Apart from the fact that many of these publications reach a lot of people around the world, you know, you can find them wherever you go, in any continent. If you go to a university, it's there. So it's not bad to have your paper there. So this means that if you are writing a paper for a class, think about using this as a basis for a publication. Ask what are the standards in the law review or the standards in the briefs. How many words, etc. You can make, you know, some moves to compatible work between classroom and the possibility of throwing your work out there. There are many possibilities. For those that are going to do academic work, this is crucial. No? You have to maximize your time. And there are many other possibilities here, no? in the university regarding academic work, practical work, volunteer work, internships, these fellowships
and so on.
I'm sure you're
working with a professor to write something. You know, a lot of professors here would acknowledge your work if they write something with your help on it. So that's also a good option.
I don't know if some of you work in the nonprofit world, if you work with non-government organizations or in academia. There's a place here called the Foundation Center. Some of you will go back to your countries to work, could be in environmental law, human rights, in some type. And one of the big problems is sources of funding, money, to develop specific work, you know, to help HIV/AIDS communities or to do research. There are many ways. This Foundation Center is a clearinghouse in the US that compiles all the information regarding grants. What money is out there, private and public, for every type of activity, doing a doctorate degree. There is money to do doctoral degrees in health, in different topics. There is money to fund institutions. There is money to fund research by private individuals. It's a huge, huge amount. I'm always surprised by this figure, that this is one of my cultural shocks when I came here. The philanthropic world in the US moves more money, has a larger budget a year than the federal government. You were talking about amazing amount, an outrageous amount figure there. Go to the Foundation Center. If you want to find sources, it's perfectly systematized, it's huge. They have courses, very quick courses, 1 or 2 days, how to learn to use their databases, and their databases, many of them are accessible through internet. So in your home countries, you will be able to use this source to find what is out there, if there is money to do research, etc. This is, you know, projecting your career beyond the LLM. You are here in Washington, and probably you can find this information. It's in Farragut North, in the metro, in the Red Line. Just a little tip about for those that work in public interest.
This one.
Great.
Good. I made a couple of notes of things that were not mentioned. This is the end of...
Yes.
Okay. So I'll go ahead and mention. Can anybody hear me without microphone? Yeah. So the first thing I wanted to say is that we didn't touch upon the fact that grades matter a lot when you go look for jobs. This is my career counseling input in the panel. I think it's important to mention that because many law firms actually have a policy, an internal policy, that they cannot hire people, even as interns, if they don't reach a certain threshold of grades. So after you finish your LLM or doing your LLM, when you get your transcripts, the law firms are going to ask you for your GPA and they are going to ask you for your transcripts. Not only law firms, but international organizations too. So what I wanted to say is just to encourage you that sometimes you come from a country where A's are not available for everybody. And here, like Professor Lai said, she won't give you A's, you know, not for the whole class at least. But I wanted to encourage you that even if back home in your country, having like close to the maximum grade is absolutely impossible. I hear that a lot from students from France. They tell me, well, you know, I did less than perfect because in my country, less than perfect is actually the max you're going to achieve because the professors just won't give you the perfect, perfect grade. I wanted to break the news to you that in the United States it's actually different because if you do make the perfect paper and if you have what it takes, pretty much, you will have a 4.0 GPA or you will have a 3.9 GPA. I have seen many students from American University who have that GPA in their resume, and I can tell you that people who have that type of grade can pretty much pick and choose the internships that they want to do. So
I wouldn't emphasize that too much, though, because I mean, I would say that I've seen a couple of people with 4.0s. I wouldn't say that I've seen many with 4.0s, and you certainly. You want to strive to get good grades, but you don't want to completely obsess on the grades.
No, I'm not saying obsessing. I'm just encouraging them that it's possible because I see a lot of students come to me and say, oh, but that's impossible. I'm never going to make
well,
it.
Well,
and I think
we are suffering, Mark Nathan, we are suffering from grade inflation.
And so this may,
there has been a push to stop that grade inflation, but on the other hand,
The other thing is leadership in activities. We noticed that the JD students grew up in this culture, so pretty much they know this already, and I think it's important for you to understand how it works. A lot of times in your country, back home, at least in my country, when I came here as an LLM, I did not know this. Back home, people don't care if you participate in student organizations such as the LLM board. People may not care that you participated in employers, right, after you get out of law school, in a moot court competition or in law review. And then as the panel was saying, I think it's extremely important in the U.S., at least, people will value that. Employers actually will expect that you didn't come to school just to sit in your class and go home and read your books. They actually expect you to be a full participant of the student community, meaning taking the role of a leader in certain activities. So if you can take part in the LLM board and get one of the positions in the board, that's great. If you can help organize a conference, if you can have some activities in your resume, at least for those of you interested in doing internships here, I think that it absolutely matters and it's interesting. And it's a cultural thing that, for me at least, was new coming here as an LLM. And the other thing I wanted to say now on my professor
but
role
there's
here,
a tension between that and grades sometimes.
Yes.
Between doing too many of these things.
The balance.
But you have to balance it out. But really the networking part, I know, for example, I'm sorry to interrupt you,
Diana, but we've had students who don't have the A grades, but the guy was really good at networking. And
yes, I know that case. He's doing really well professionally.
He does very good well professionally,
good
but
salary.
I mean, he's extraordinarily good at networking. But he doesn't have dismal grades. I mean, there is a sort of a balancing that is done between how much time you study and how much time. The extracurricular helps. Sorry.
Yeah,
Okay. Moving on.
So network and don't get expelled. It was in.
Yeah, that's a good practice. The other thing, as a professor role, because I teach here as well, and my class doesn't have an exam. That's why it's a kind of popular class because people don't like the exam. No, I'm kidding. But we do papers. And what I've noticed is people change the topics that they want to do. In the beginning of the semester, you think of one topic and you narrow it down with the professor and everything. And then as you start working on your research, you may change, which is, okay, it's normal if it's 1 month into the semester. But I've had students change it like 2 weeks before handing the paper in. Have you had that happen?
Yeah.
So when you do that, what happens is the person who actually did this gave us a paper that was actually the 20 or 30 pages that he wrote, maybe two paragraphs were his words and the rest was just quotes of statutes from places that he took. Right? And he did the citations and everything was great. However, it was not his creativity in the paper. So I wanted to call your attention that I don't know if that's what it's done, in other countries, but at least here, the professors really expect that you digested the material, that you massaged the issue, like Professor Lai said, and you are going to give your own opinion, your own creativity on the paper. Don't just, put a whole bunch of cited, even if everything is cited and quoted and everything, we want to see what you have to say about the topic. That's more important for us actually than just copying things from everywhere. And I had one case of a student who did this, so I thought I would mention because we don't want to see that again. And the last thing I want to say, because I'm monopolizing the time, is that you need to realize that other schools don't have the type of help that you are having here because they just have too many students and they don't have individualized time to dedicate to you. So basically having somebody on staff like Philippa who can help you with your papers is something absolutely unique. I mean, I've talked to LLMs from all over other schools. I've never seen a school that dedicates individual sessions to actually look at your papers, look at how you're writing, improve your grammar, improve your speaking. That's something unique here. The other thing is the career counseling that you receive from us, and that's my plug for my services, which is that other law schools don't have even authorization from their deans to meet with students individually for resume review, at least the ones in town that we have heard of. They have 350 LLMs. They won't have time to sit with you. Many times you come here and you don't realize that that's what you're getting, and I think that this school is very competitive when it comes to that because you won't get that anywhere else. So sorry to interrupt and to say something.
That's great. Okay.
I guess a couple of things that were actually brought up in the last panel. People had questions about when the professor speaks too quietly or too quickly, or you only understand, say, 70% of what the professor said. And another question I got afterwards was some people see the professors as godlike creatures that have very intimidated about approaching.
Right.
How would you address that?
How do I feel about being godlike? Not bad. No. She told my husband that.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I really tell people to tell me if I do it. I once got a review from a student in my reviews that said, Professor Alai does not need a microphone, sometimes too loud. So, I don't have a problem about speaking too quietly. I do have a problem about speaking too fast. I believe. I've heard that in reviews, but nobody told me this while this was happening. So I know it's hard to say, but I really don't have any problem with people raising their hand and saying, can you slow down? Just slow down. That's fine. Let's slow down. No problem. And I think there's a balance between talking and showing absolutely no respect for not only the professor but people around you, and then thinking that everything they say is from coming on high. It's neither one of these. It's true. We are here. We have more experience. Unfortunately, we are much older. So there's some things that come up with that. But there's a lot that we're doing collaboratively, right? I'm doing this. Diego is doing this. We're all doing this because we like it. I don't think you ever have professors that are doing this because this is the way to make money, especially not in law school. I mean, if we were history professors, maybe that's the only thing we could do, or English. But this is really something that we enjoy doing. We wanted to be in this, involved in the life of the mind, and to teach. I mean, I personally enjoy teaching. And
I've had people come to my office who I know are nervous. Now, I don't think it's me that's making them nervous. But, you know, I think it has to do with what you think. When I came to this country myself, I'd gone to high school in England, and I remember that whenever the teacher would come, I would stand up because I was told, you know, I'm used to standing up, because that's what we did when the teacher entered the room, and I had to hold on to the table to make sure that I didn't stand up. So these are things that come up. But one thing I have to mention to you about America, familiarity of first name basis and all of that, that's something that I'm not comfortable with. I mean, I don't have any, people say, no, calling me by the first, that's something that I'm not comfortable with. Now, why that is, I don't know. But I can tell you that just because I went to Harvard Law School and we could call our, some of my students would call their faculty by their first name, like Mort or Morton, that does not mean that there's no hierarchy and there's no closeness. There's a misunderstanding. The United States people are friendly. You can call them by the first name, but that does not necessarily mean there's no hierarchy. By the same token, calling somebody Professor so-and-so and seemingly being respected doesn't mean that there's distance. These are form over substance. This is just how we engage. I mean, it's really dirty. It's something that I had to get used to myself, coming to the United States, because you misunderstand. You think the friendliness and the first person means that it's open door or it's closeness. It's not an indication of any of that. By the same token, me saying, you know, say professor, it doesn't mean that I want distance. I think maybe it's more some of them are cultural, but they don't. One doesn't necessarily mean there's closeness. Or lack thereof.
So, there's a lie.
Yes.
If one person stands up and nobody in the class understands it, what can you do as the class, for example?
I would get a few of the students to talk to and say, we don't understand what you're saying. And if you want, you can talk to me when we can talk. If that's the situation. When the first time, I mean, I don't mean that the person is going to become the best teacher, but they can at least try to improve. Maybe they need a microphone. Maybe they need to, you know that they need to do something differently. I know that the first time I taught,
I had somebody at the LLM board, this is years ago,
come up to me and say, we're confused. We don't understand what you're saying. Maybe you can, beginning of every class, give us an outline of what you're going to say so we can figure it out. This was international business transaction. And this was when I was practicing law. I had never taught before. I would say 94, 95. I thought that, I mean, of course you get hurt. It's shocking. But it was very helpful because I sort of understood that this is what I needed to. Now, I'm not saying, I don't know how this person is going to react, but I don't think there's a problem with that. And we can talk about it too if you want something not directly from the students.
Many things can be solved just talking, literally. And addressing it respect, for example, I remember I work also in the Academy of Human Rights, and we have professors coming from around the world. And some of them have a completely way to deliver, a different way to deliver a class. And we have solved some of the problems just with technology, as you say, you know, with a small microphone, because it was impossible to get some of these professors to stand up. And
ask them, maybe they should give you an outline of what they're talking about.
Then. Yes, it was.
It doesn't make sense?
Wonderful. If I go to him, it would hurt his feelings, so.
How do you know?
I don't know. Since they're like, you know, everybody understands him, but nobody understands him.
I think it's better than that. I think it's more, I mean, we can talk about it if you want somebody else to talk to him. Mm-hmm. But I think if it comes from the student, it's really like, we like you, we are trying, but we're not understanding this or that. You don't need to say we don't understand anything.
We don't like you.
Yeah. And then we can talk about it. I don't know about that particular instance, but it seems kind of extreme.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. One question I have for you. There have been discussing about the internships, how to go about the jobs, you know, the internship part, which in my experience was also very interesting, because when I first arrived here, also that was a completely different world. How to, if I want to find a job, I have the Washington or the U.S. experience after my LLM, how can I find a job? And it was a very, very complex approach. A lot of people didn't want, for example, to do an internship. Oh, that's volunteer. They won't pay me. No, that's almost slavery. You know, I'm going to be donating my time. I have worked now 2-3 years in a law firm. I've been 4-5 years working with a government. I have a salary. Now come to, you know, come to the U.S. and work for free. And really, you know, my only recommendation is that you understand that in the U.S., when you are coming trying to find a job in the U.S., one of the best, if not the only way, one of the best ways of finding it is to do an internship and begin to network, volunteering your time. It's going to be very, very difficult. You have to be very lucky to just go interview and get a job. You know, probably you've been advising them that you may do it. You may have a lot of experience, but it's going to be very difficult. You have to be strategic. You have to get engaged, maybe while you are studying, balance, you know, with your course load. Begin to do some internships. You'll be networking. You'll get to know other people during that experience, and maybe they'll see that you're a good worker. You'll test yourself. That's, I think, a very important way to go about jobs. I do a lot of emphasis on this because I think that a lot of you, I'm sure, have that as an objective. Never, you know, try to get an internship. It's going to be extremely competitive. To get the internship, volunteer, non-paid. You know, I was working in an NGO here. We received more than 50 resumes from around the world, from Harvard, from Berkeley, American, from London School of Economics, to come here for 3 months in the summer to do an internship. And only 3 or 4 were selected. You can imagine that's for the non-paid position. You are here in Washington.
Non-paid means easy.
Yeah, exactly. It's tremendous. But it can be pretty nice. I would give a high percentage of success for those that do a very good strategic internship. You may be able to find an interesting job or at least a very interesting contact for your future in your home country. Huh?
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, guys.